The Revenge of By the Numbers is brought to you by eSportsBet, the industry's leading crypto odds matrix. They are still running their classic first-time crypto deposit bonus of 50% up to 200 USDT.
Chris is lost to move the picture. Oh, still very much in the round. Oh, Chris, he's found three. It's down to a 2-on-2. Chris, can he close this with an ace? Oh, my God.
He gives him a chance at least, and this CZ kill could be everything. Finally, Zeus, he does something.
Looking for a second, he connects it. Oh, and he gets a third as well. Surely he's not going to pull this off.
He's already got three.
Welcome, everybody, back for another episode of By the Numbers. Revenge of By the Numbers, that is, of course. And we had last week off, so thanks, everybody, for the patience. We're back this week, and Duncan, I mean, two weeks worth of news to go over, so it's going to be a good show. But how you doing, man? You feeling good?
Yeah, generally.
By the way, spoiler, there's definitely some potential comedy bait in some of these stories. I can already see the laughs are coming. Like, but it is weird. There's already one later that I won't even spoil, where it's not even for me. Like, you know that, you know, I like, I will shout out the CSGO Leaks account stuff, that I saw one that I'll mention way later in the episode where some fan did come up with one of the bangers of the year. So we'll come to that later. We'll come to that later. It's all good.
Okay. Now I'm curious.
As an aside, I do have a quick question though. We'll start with some minor petty grievances. So the petty grievances is this, Semler, is I actually feel like we've done it's mad that I'm the one to come to you with this, but we need an intervention, mate, because here's the intervention. It's all well and good using your platform. Like, I do it all the time to put out whatever you want into the world. That is essentially, I do think, what you should use your platform for. But I still think you actually think you can win some of these arguments about, like, female gaming. Like, fully aware, like, that ship has sailed completely. Because here's the thing. Semler, I'll give you an example, and this example alone will show you why it is a waste of everyone's time to even have these discussions. They are not good faith discussions. Here's how you know, right? So you might have seen, like, something like 2 days ago, I put out a Reflections episode with Sombi. So everyone on the rest, Zoe, she used to work at ESL in Europe, and then obviously now she does the Overwatch League and is the host and has done every role in the Overwatch League at this point in time. She'll be the commentator, analyst, now she's the desk host. And she is a super OG veteran of esports woman. And she's even someone, by the way, this is why if you watch the interview, I even say, like, should it even be a topic in an interview or ask about winning esports? You don't even need to ask about that topic. Like, you could do a whole interview with her just about the games she's worked in, the tournament she's worked on, and the role she's done. You wouldn't even have to make the whole, like, but you're a woman because she's so OG and her resume is fucking unbelievable. If you don't know, guys, she worked with every major company. She even could have done League of Legends for, like, LEC and stuff. It just didn't go that way in that direction. She went to end up in OWL, right? So the point I'm going to make is this.
She went Dota instead of LoL because she was...
No, she said she originally did the first... She actually says in the interview, by the way, she was very jealous of Shox for many years because Shox got the gig instead of her to do, like, ULCS. Because remember, ESL did the first season of that and then it became later, like, a Riot only brought. So anyway, she was kind of like a shoe-in to potentially do it. So the point I'm making is this. When I do an interview with someone like that, spoiler, that person absolutely, and in this case, I actually do know her a little bit. I can tell you absolutely she would say this, is co-signing me as a character and individual and professional in this industry. When they do that interview, they're saying, I also think this guy has some relevance and deserves to have a part. All those things, right? Now, logically, Semler, if you were just a fan who knows neither Soy or me or you, you should look at that and go, that's a point in Thorin's column, isn't it? That means a super OG veteran woman who, by the way, has done plenty of things about, like, LGBTQ stuff and inclusiveness. She does believe in those things. She just believes in it in the real way, guys, not in the, like, fucked up political way. Like, she's actually a cool person. So the point I make is this. That should actually be a cosign that I'm legit, right, Semler? But no, because if you go and you read the comments, here's what you'll find, Semler. People go, just because you talked to a woman one time doesn't mean you're not a misogynist. So then my fans, are you ready? My fans naively jump in and they go, but he didn't just talk to a woman, did he? He did shows with Frost Gorin. He did shows with Kelsey Moser. He did shows with Emily Rand. And what you realize is this, Semler, at the end, their point is just like, so you did shows with 8 women. So what you realize is this. This is the standard. It's not about misogyny. I learned this years ago. I don't know if people know this. You know, everyone on the internet is terrified of being called a Nazi. So that is known by left-wing people, and that's why it's their go-to answer. They don't really mean you believe in the ideology of the government of 1939 and 1945 in Germany. What they mean is you don't support my Democrat-slash-left-wing worldview, so I just call everyone who doesn't a Nazi, because to me, you may as well be a Nazi. That's what they're sort of saying when they say Nazi. Well, spoiler, here's the problem, Samler. In the modern world, these women we're talking about, it proves it. If you were doing the Anubis scale, right? So I did some tweets that mildly criticized the premise of a female league. And then I helped dozens of women, countless people. I even gave Shox her first fucking start in the industry. I've done all these insane things. So what it shows is this, Semler. Nothing you do on the side that should count for you ever counts because of the thing you did. So really, the message is this. This is the message of the industry. Misogyny to these people just equals a man saying an opinion I don't like, not agreeing with me. That's it. That's it. So in that scenario, they're never going to agree with you. They're never going to give any ground. You could help literally, by the way, I point this out about Carlos. He has tangibly, financially helped women make millions of dollars collectively now and done all these massive, it doesn't matter. The one little thing they don't like scrubs that all out. So I'm not saying like, look, keep doing your thing. It's your platform. Give whatever to you. But just, I just hope you are fully aware. Like, I don't think you're going to get any ground there. Like, you might get some people like I just did there. You might get the odd, legit veteran person to sort of like step across the line or be like, I don't believe in a line. Let's transcend politics. But as a general movement, there's no ground to be made there, I'm afraid, mate. I just feel like it's a dead end, you know. That's my vibe.
It does feel that way. Hold on, real quick. Jerk, thanks for the support, man. Really appreciate it. Loads of subs from Jerk just now. So thank you, dude. Thank you for the support, and thanks Jerky's to all the guys who are subbed, and also holding Grogcoin as well, because we'll get to your questions later at the end of the show. Yes. But you know, thanks a lot for the support. You guys are what makes the show happen. I've kind of had that. I like the one of the awesome things about having a dog is that you go on walks frequently, and in those walks, you can just kind of like unplugged and maybe ruminate on these topics, kind of think on these sorts of things.
You just let your brain do like free association. Right?
Kind of float along and you have fun with them, you know, and you run a little bit. And with him, he runs after deer and hare. So I run after deer and hare a bunch, and it's good times. But it does let you kind of like sit there and think a little bit on some of these topics. And one of them really is just that, is that these, like, I don't know, you know, I think about it as much as I can, and I'm still just kind of on the fence. On the one side, I agree with you in that there are clearly bad actors in the space who are just, they claim one thing while in fact all of their actions indicate another. And so, you know, they claim to represent LGBT, they claim to represent female, they claim to represent minority, they claim all this. When in reality, it's nothing. They just care about power and being able to pull it over you, being able to essentially tear you down or have any kind of semblance of power over you. That's all they really care about.
Gatekeep your career, basically. Gatekeep your the industry, whatever.
So right? there's those people. But at the same time, flip side of that is I have received a tremendous number of messages and all that from women in the space.
Okay.
Who you know, women and, you know, just people in the space. Who say, you know, thanks for saying it out loud, you know, because like a lot of these people can't come forward.
Yes.
For whatever reason. And I'm not saying like, oh, you know, high and mighty, whatever. Like, I'm in a very unique situation where I feel like I'm in that window where I can say something right now. And if I didn't say something, then I would hold it against myself going forward. I think that's like where I'm at right now. So I noticed this thing. I noticed that nobody else is in a position to say anything about it. And so like, what I really like about this is that it's the same kind of thing that you just brought up, in the sense that, well, you know, you only talk to, maybe he's just talked to 8 women. It's just like, well, if none of the females say anything. And it was just perfect when that Brazilian article dropped, where that Brazilian player, you know, called me out and said, you know, it's like, if this guy was a Brazilian commentator, I'd do everything I could to shut him out and like, you know, get rid of his career and kill his career and fuck him in the ass and all that sort of shit. I was like, whoa, 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 that's your thing. But,
by the way, even that, I'll just throw this out there. That's another very telling thing about these people. Have you noticed? Sure. What they do, the second, by the way, you disagree with them, they'll even do it to women who disagree with them, like on political lines. They immediately go to all the insults they claim that they get from men and that toxicity. Like as you'll see there, Semler, the same people who believe ideologically there's nothing wrong with taking up the arse say you're going to take up the arse thinking it's a thing to mock you over. It's like, well, what are you mocking me over then if it's awesome? Exactly. Like, that's because, you know, when the Brazilians do that, I've never bought that. It's like, you can't see
that was the tweet. That was the tweet that I then put out where I said, okay, I took that, I quote tweeted it, and I said, you know, gee, I wonder why nobody wants to, even if they want to just have a conversation about it, why nobody does. None of the female pros do. Nobody does. Because if this is the reaction that you get where it gets cranked up to 100 immediately, and it's like, I will end your career and do everything I possibly can to end your career. She's like, well, the stakes are too high for a lot of people.
Yes.
It's like, you know, so naturally, when you're in that kind of scenario, you notice that these people are always the bullies. You know, they claim that you're the bully.
Yeah, the cry bullies.
You're the person, you know, who's immoral.
Exactly.
And no. It's inversion. It's always inversion. It's always exactly 180 degrees. It's always them who are the racists, them who are the sexists, them who are constantly always, you know, trying to bully people and just gang up on people. And it's always the same thing. And so, whether I keep it or not. I mean, the thing is, like, I posted I am just legitimately interested in it. And the point that I had a conversation with one of our compatriots. I won't name names, but like, I had a long conversation with one of our close friends, and we came to the conclusion that it wouldn't have been an issue if they had said it was a safe space league, because what they've framed here with this league is that, well, there's so much misogyny and toxicity over here, we need to create a safe environment to foster growth, and we need to create a safe environment so that they can, you know, compete and have their fun and do all sort of thing, right? And so I said, if they had just named it the Safe Space League or anything like that, we wouldn't be having this conversation. I feel like it would be demeaning for women. This whole thing is demeaning for women. But like, I feel like that would be particularly demeaning for women, that you feel like they need a safe space. Or if they'd have called it the Minority League, because they always say like, oh, the minorities are the ones who, you know, need all this protection. And, you know, they get attacked daily. And so they need a safe place. So it's like, had you called it the Minority League? Again, maybe I would have made a quip about, well, you know, that's kind of insulting to women, you know, saying that they're a minority. They are kind of half the population, all that sort of thing, right? It's the problem that they call it the female league, and like, words have meaning, and you need to stick to the meaning. You don't just get to arbitrarily change the meaning of words to suit your narrative. And so it's the fact that they called it the female league and are then now allowing men to compete in the female. It's like, now we have to have a conversation about it, because now you are out of line, and women are suffering, because if the league is supposed to be for women, for each other person that you allow into the league, that's taking a spot away from a woman who could be competing in that league. So if your stated goal is to provide a place for women to compete, then you need to stick to that goal. And I'm going to call you on it if you don't. And so that's why we are where we are.
By the way, I'll throw this out there as well, because I saw not only everyone's favorite, incredibly cool gimmick poster, Ryan at Push V, whose gimmick is, I'm from North America, I like Cloud9, years after they were already big team. It's like, fucking narrow it down, homie. It's about 10 million a year. And you do look like a generic human made in a FIFA, make your own player thing. Are you fucking kidding me? Give me a break. So anyway, there's him. And then I saw Jacob Wolf as well was fucking jumping in there, mate. This is the shittest gotcha of all time. So the gotcha seminar, are you ready? Get ready, guys. If you're a fan of their way of thinking, we're going to get so owned right now. So when Semler pointed out, why are men allowed to play in the women's league? They go, gotcha, because you were always against women's leagues. So you didn't even get the point at the beginning. That was the whole point at the beginning, was we were never against it. That was point one. That was the foundational point of every argument we've ever made since December 2021. So what that means, guys, are you ready? Not a single one of them, including esports award-winning journalist Jacob Wolf, including shit-tier nobody-will-never-win-an-award Ryan at Push V, Dust2US, none of these guys ever bothered, they're fucking journalists, guys, to even find what Semler's point was before rebutting his point in public. That is actually, because here's the thing, mate. I know shithead fans don't read. I know people who are politically driven don't read. You guys are journalists, dude. Come on. Although there are legit ones, but you know what I mean? Like, I get it when an idiot fan just does that. Like, put some fucking effort in, Jacob Wolf. Actually, here's the first thing you do before you tell someone they're wrong. You find out, what do they even think? How do you know they're wrong if you don't know what they think? It's so fucking ignorant, because, mate, I could not believe everyone on the internet was, like, clapping for that, like it was a massive gotcha. Like, what's the gotcha? The joke is, Semler did care about the female league. That's why he risked his career to speak about it. Now he cares about the female league, only having females in it. So he's risking his career again. By the way, here's the real question I'd spin the other way. You know what they all do, Semler, that is so fucking gross? It's some Frankie-level behavior. They act like we're in a parallel universe where it's the opposite. Gaming is full of evil, like potentially violent right-wing extremists who will murder anyone who speaks in favor of feminism or that. So they think they're the fucking hero. Explain this to me. What job will Jacob Wolf ever lose for making those statements? What status in our industry will he ever lose because of those statements? What company will not partner with Jacob Wolf because of those statements? None of them. They have the they are the literal orthodoxy. They are the entire ideological hegemony of the whole fucking space. And when you actually are the one person who has a different opinion, which you notice they never waste their time listening to, you're not even allowed the opinion. I'm going to say this because I'll say it a million times over. We live in a world where people will talk about, I don't have the right to this. I don't have the right to that. We need more rights. Can I have the right to a fucking opinion? Can I just have an opinion? I'm asking for anything else. I'm not even saying
talking about the weather, right?
It's mental, innit? I know. Like, all we're asking is a fucking opinion. That seems like a basic for everyone, right? Come on, man. So wild, isn't it? Wasn't that so disappointing? I mean, you must have thought the same thing. Like, dude, they're not even trying. Like, come on, bro. No, that would keep up.
That's the thing where it's like, I get your point about not even engaged. Like, I didn't respond. I saw Wolf's tweet, and I saw that how many hundreds of likes I got. And I'm
of course. Okay. It's like a dunk, wasn't it?
And it's just like, that is the point where it's just like, yeah, there's no point responding to this because they're not, they've already checked out. They're not actually looking to engage with an argument. They're there to like farm. They're there to clout farm, clout chase.
Oh, they are. Yes.
And so they're not
He's not there to talk to you, somebody. You're right. He's there to be seen telling you off in a condescending way so everyone could go, well done, Jacob. Very mature.
For journalists who write articles to not reach out for comment or anything like that, you know, it's like then you know that it's not about actually getting both sides to a story or anything like that. I've never been reached out to by any of them, these so-called journalists, you know, these fucking hacks. So fuck them. It's not worth the time. What is worth the time, and that's where it's you're doing like the arithmetic, I guess, or whatever, but what is worth the time is when I do get messages from women and when I do get messages from parents who are like, listen, thank you very much because it feels like I can't talk about it, or, you know, then it's like, okay, cool, fine. Let's roll. So you know, and the thing is like, I do care about the female league because I am interested in seeing it. I am interested in seeing it succeed. I've never been against female leagues. What I have been against is, what I have said from the start is that you need to find a model like any other. Like, you know, it's not like the male league is some charity where money just rains out of the sky. Well, now it does. But like when it got started, you know, esports wasn't just something that just, you know, popped out of the fucking ground ready made. And it was only for men. And it was like a club, you know, with the sign on the door that says male only. And then, you know, if you're a girl, nah, fuck off. You can't play in our league. You know, none of that. It's people wanted to watch the best in the world compete at a video game. And so sponsors showed up, viewers showed up, then sponsors showed up, and then, you know, it builds up from there. And so the women, the females have to find a model that works for them. And so that's why I'm trying to keep an eye on things, just because it's like, I want an idea of where the viewership is at. And so last week, I mean, we are spending a bit of time on this and we aren't going to spend much more on it.
Yeah, I'll be off to this story.
I did. And, you know, this was another thing where it's like, it didn't get any traction. But what I am doing is, thanks to websites like ES Charts that actually keep tabs on everything, and we'll have the links below, guys, in case you're interested in looking for yourselves. We'll have all the links in the description, everything we talk about. We try to put links there so you guys can check for yourselves. But ES Charts actually do kind of gather those stats up. And the story is that without any of the men helping, without Gaulis, who's pumping the numbers up and all of that, the numbers are actually very low. For a grand final championship, they peaked at like 8,900. They averaged 2,000 viewers for the whole event. It's like,
you know what I'll say, mate? I've said this in the past, but I'm going to throw it out there. One of the problems I have is this. Obviously, yes, the female pros themselves tweet about because they're playing in this tournament, Semler. I don't see any of the women who tell me they support all female initiatives ever tweet about that league. They don't watch
it. They never tweet to go and watch.
I know, exactly. They don't ever watch it. No, they don't watch it.
None of them do. And clearly none of them do because they got 80,000 hours watched over 30 hours of airtime, 8,900 peak, and 2,500 viewers average. So, I mean, like, So when I tweeted this, to me, this is like, okay, this is actually the real poll because you're competing with Blast Fall Finals where you got Na'Vi and FaZe and everybody, right? So you got the male CS and the best of the best in the male CS that's going parallel to your tournament. So you couldn't ask for worse competition. And then you've also got the World Cup going on at the same time. So you don't know if people even, you know, viewership was low for Blast. And that's probably because the World Cup is going on because people are watching the football instead of watching the CS. Awesome. And so you've got that double whammy that the women are dealing with. And so what I wanted to try to get across with that tweet was like, this is actually the real, if you wanted to have an idea of where you stand in terms of actual fan base pull for the female league, this is probably the closest you're going to get to it. Because it's not like a Riot, where Riot like embed the stream and then do in-game drops and then, you know, make get all the co-streamers, Tarek and everybody, you know, so it's like just pump the numbers up as much as possible over in Valorant to make it look like, holy shit, the Valorant is the place where it's the place to be. That was very tricky on their part, because if you actually look at the whole year for the Valorant female tournaments, it averages just about the same as the CS, maybe slightly right. more. So just in terms of like female competition across all the FPS right now, it's very low. And so the question is, what are you going to do about that? Is it building brands? Is it getting more interest in the females? Is it trying to find some kind of angle? Because you're right now, unless you're getting enormous help from like the mainstream stuff going on, you're not pulling in viewership enough to justify the spend. So that's the question that the female scene are faced with. And it feels like it's the same question that they've been faced with for the past 20 years, but they're going to have to start trying to come up with it, because now that they have actual hundreds of thousands of dollars being pumped into it, there's real cost involved, because that doesn't even cover the cost of production, the cost of the talent. They're flying in Bardolph and Blay and Anders. Like, those guys charge day rates, and they charge big day rates. So you know, you got to justify the spend somehow. And if you're getting 8,000 peak viewers for a tournament where you're spending tens and tens of thousands, it's going to be interesting. Like, you're going to start asking questions, and given ESL's track record, when things stop, you know, being relevant or making money, they tend to drop them. I'll be very curious to see if ESL continue with this or if they're going to find a way out. But
I'll give you an angle on this, because I actually think a mistake they're making with that league, this is a real piece of advice for the industry, is, I don't know if you know this, Semler, but one of the reasons why, you know, in League of Legends, people always like rave about the LEC, the European Broadcast for League, and how it's grown over the years, got its own flavor, and even has way more viewers than North America now, right? One of the reasons for many years, Semler, that the European broadcast could never reach the heights of the NA broadcast is because they used to purposely time the broadcast in the European one, so it would end and then it would go right into the North American broadcast. So they would take their viewership in theory, right? And it was even structured that way. Yeah. And as well, let's be real. Obviously, at the time, if you're European, as long as you just stay up like you're a gamer, you can watch the LCS as well. So you can double your viewership. You double dip a bit, right? To me, the obvious move for ESL would be like, look, you're not going to do it after like EIM Cologne or something. But you know, like those ESL Challenger tournaments they do for the men where like Outsiders won the Rotterdam one. I would literally make my day so that like I would do it so that like that ends at like say 8 p.m. or 9 p.m. or something. And I would have the female match right after and just host on the same stream and just go straight into it and carry the viewership. And look, here's, let's be real, a bunch of people are going to tune out. But some people will just see, coming up after the break, more Counter-Strike. Someone will stay. Like, that's actually even a good angle to use, because as you say, the real problem is by putting it as its own totally legit product, which it isn't yet. Hence, if you go right back to the beginning, what we were talking about with the marketing, it doesn't actually have a leg to stand on right now. Whereas like what you want to do actually is, as much as, yeah, look, it would skew the numbers and they'd probably lie and pretend it was just because of female gaming. If you just on a practical level want to increase viewership, these are ways you could do it.
Yes. And then you get the, sponsors. You can justify the spend to the sponsors. You got to pull out every trick right now. And so, well, at least now we have this kind of experiment run already, where it's just like, okay, this was, again, it's pretty much like the worst case scenario, barring a major. You know, you probably couldn't have done worse than, you know, having a major.
The World Cup's pretty brutal in itself, to be fair. Like,
you know, so like you literally ran it on hard mode, right? Yes. Just like as hard as you could. And so now we have that understanding of like, okay, this is probably like the ultimate baseline of like where we're at. And then we can start stacking from here. So if anything, ESL have got that going for them. Like what I think happened is just, that because there was that clear week after the major, but ESL ran the major, and it's probably the same people who are running this ESL Impact thing, and because, you know, so it's like they needed that week off to regen after the major, probably get over jet lag, all that sort of stuff. So instead of running it in that clear week where they could have, you know, done something, I think, or maybe like increased the viewership or whatever, because they wouldn't have been directly competing with anybody. Here we are. Okay.
Did you know Esports Bet doesn't just offer bets and fixtures on all the big esports, CSGO, League of Legends, Dota, Valorant, Rainbow Six, FIFA, everything you can think of, Quake, but also they are actually offering the World Cup. That's right, football, soccer. You can bet on World Cup games at Esports Bet.
So let's get into some of the other stuff. Actually, well, I mean, let's just get right into it though, because it has been quiet, you know, pretty much for like a while there. We were referencing at least one of their articles per show pretty consistently. But did you see the news that Jackson.gg is shut down?
Oh, very much so. Yes.
Unfortunate, man. They were doing good work. Really,
I thought that joke was the fucking the line, though. I just said, like, it was obviously just all an elaborate sort of like fucking PR campaign by Astralis to bring the Vikes back. Because the joke is that, like, if people don't know, like, that was that along with the config one, like, they're just the PR arm of Astralis. Although, like, in theory, the Astralis config story was sort of bad for Astralis, but yeah. Now that device is back, magically just shut down, didn't it? Like, is that really what's going on, guys? But it looks like that. It looks like that.
The joke was that Astralis, you know, that config didn't actually get in a fight with a promoter. He got in a fight with the leak. And that's what was going on. They used config to take the leak out. And then, you know, without the leak, well, then Jackson, that's it. Because 90% of their articles were about Astralis. Without the leak, that's it. They fold. So... I know it's dumb, but it is, it's config. It's unfortunate to see Jackson closing. And I'll give you a quick read on the tweet, because I mean, that you have the experience in the space, and you can tell me if this is good or bad, but, let's see. Christian Slott, who was the editor in chief over there, says that they've closed, even though we showed explosive growth, 1.3 million visits after 4 months, exceeding KPIs with 100%. Following website launch in July, the owners decided to quit. No money, rough times. And so he says he's insanely proud. And of course, I mean, I think he should be, because they crushed it. But what do you think about that traffic? I mean, do you have any kind of insight as to whether or not that, like, where that measures up in terms of traffic, in terms of the journalism in the industry?
I mean, those numbers sound very good. The problem is, it's all based on, like, put it this way, on this channel right now, if you go to the YouTube channel, if you're watching the VOD, there will already be the VOD up, because it came out today, of Snake and Banton. There's actually a topic we addressed on that. So I'll go over some of the things I talked about on this, but I won't, like, cannibalize those points too much. I'll leave them on their own. Basically, I would say this, Semler. The problem with most of the media sites like that is they tend, like, here's the real problem. To get the money in the first place, they usually have to oversell what numbers they can get to get the money to even start. And then you would basically just hope you can get those numbers. So even though those are amazing numbers, as far as I can tell, especially for how long the site's been around, not very long. The problem is, if you really aggressively sold that you were going to make, like, millions and millions of it, then maybe to a viewer that's not enough. And also, quite frankly, if you look at the way he phrased it, it just sounds like they wanted to pull their money out. Remember, this is, it's a bit like 2 years ago with ye old COVID and online shit. Like, it wasn't like esports itself was directly connected, but you had all those other companies that were part of the ones sponsoring, investing, propping up, reinvesting. And those were all the companies that basically said, sorry, not this year. Like, the budget's gone. Like, we don't have live viewership. So at my company, that's a basketball team, can't sponsor your team this year. We're going to have to slash the budget. So I would suggest something like that. It's also probably the world that, like, the economic world right now means anyway, these companies are all looking to crush the budgets, get rid of the margins. And so if, like, sponsoring some or investing into some fucking website for, like, news in Counter-Strike doesn't really seem like it'd be top of your list. That'd probably be the first thing you'd cut, which has always been the story with esports. We're the first thing that gets eliminated on the budget of real companies, unfortunately. And then the other thing I would say is this. I actually did think in general they did a good job. It's just that as much as those stories, the config and the device ones, did get massive numbers, it's also, I think, really hard to get, like, huge sensational stories with any regularity in esports. Like, beyond just raw drama, like, dude, even the actual player transfers don't work now, because remember, in the modern day, HLTV is just going to rewrite your post 5 seconds later and put it on their website, and all the people who go to HLTV are just going to click that and read it. They're not going to click the hyperlink and go to your, so, like, exactly. You know, like, yeah. You've only really got the drama. And that's why, actually, as a very quick aside, I've already commented on this on the Snake and Bandit, so I want to get your take on this. I actually thought the really sad thing about this is, like, as usual, Reddit is, like, a perfect barometer for what is correct, because they're always wrong. So, as usual, in the latest episode of Reddit is Always Wrong, you know, Semler, how I've pointed out how they don't care about, like, some anonymous leaker who gets shit wrong all the time, but they will torture Richard Lewis and DK over, like, every minor word they've ever said, and imply these guys are actual human dog shit, even though their work is impeccable and has no flaws, almost never violated professional ethics. So what Reddit shows is they always actually try and basically, it's like that thing, a prophet will never be, like, welcome in his own land. They will always destroy the legit person. So I saw Reddit thinks this is great news, because you know what? Jackson was just a tabloid TMZ website. I've been informed similar. I don't know in what context, because Richard's pointed this out many times on the Old by the Numbers. As far as I can tell, every story Jackson ever reported on that I had a lead on, they were accurate, what they reported. They were correct. I've even pointed this out in the past. I have been a source for Jackson when I've had my own people that have had stuff and been able to give them a lead or a tip, like, you know, check out this person, maybe he can corroborate what you're saying. Like, as far as I can tell, they were doing a very good job, actually, Summer. True, the sub subject matter might have been in the wheelhouse of a tabloid, but like, let's be real. A massive professional player getting in a fight, which potentially, in this case, could have ended his life. That's actually in the public interest. That's absolutely something that any website or newspaper would report. So I thought, I wanted to get your take on that because, dude, it's one thing that a site dies. Like, why do fans have to, like, celebrate it? Like, you think it's good that this website doesn't exist? Why? We wouldn't know all this information about config. We wouldn't know about device. We'd just been sat there waiting for liars from Nip, like, to wait a year to tell us what's happening. Like, I don't get how people can cheer that on, me. Like, if you cheer that on, you must just be a nihilist. Like, there's nothing good in the world to you.
Or you're actively, or for whatever reason, as you were talking there, for whatever reason, I was thinking that if subconsciously or consciously they are aware that they themselves are not doing good, how to put this, like that they have to tear down whatever it is that they see as good or doing good, and so they themselves, whether they know it or not, they it's like they repel it like a magnet.
There is a bit of that. Put it this way, that's the real reason, in my opinion, they go so hard after me and Richard and claim that we're people without integrity and liars, because they know we're not, and that we actually advertise that's people with integrity and we're not. Yeah, as you say, it emphasizes that if they have any flaw, they have to show that we're human as well, and that we're flawed. And if we are, they think it's like a tie at that point, you know.
You have to like lean into it as well. That was one of the things. It's funny that you, like, you know, it's just in terms of like if you, what your track record is, but. That, I think that's really what it is. It's like it's also a pedestal thing where it's like once you're at the top, if you get too high to the top, and if you're there too long, even if you are the best at what you're doing, it doesn't matter. Then it becomes about how can they tear you down.
Oh, by the way, there's even a great line I always say. I know people are going to think the source is a meme, but this is a great line, I thought. Travis Gafford from League of Legends, when I used to work with him like almost 10 years ago, he had a great line for it. He said it's called the rubber band effect. He said what happens is when you get popular, it's like they're pulling the rubber band out and out and out, and they're going, oh, you're brilliant, you're the best, you should replace the current guy that's there. Oh, he's number one, you give him all the awards. But then as you say, eventually they hit the point where it's like, let's let go of this rubber band. And it's like they come for you. They come for everyone in the end, mate, everyone. And the reason I know this
is
true.
Coming after Scrawny and Launders now.
Of course, that's what these idiots don't get. When the people themselves see this process put them to the top, they naively think, oh, brilliant, they're just like me. It's not actually a thing. And what you don't know is this. I'll explain very briefly to people. You remember this, Semler. When I was the number one person in CSGO as an analyst, all the shithead fans did on Reddit is go, Yanko's better because Yanko knows the game. He was a pro. Then when Yanko became a coach, Yanko knows nothing about the game. He's a fucking boring, idiot. No, yeah, he's garbage. All he did is, he didn't know anything about it. Look at the way MIBR play. So now, when Yanko was number one, they said Sponge is the king because Sponge was a more popular former player. Now that Sponge, you know, see what I mean? It's just a fucking shit, like, treadmill of dog shit where they just tear someone down every single case. Like, and the joke is, mate, I've even seen, no joke, people criticize Maniac, fucking Lurpis. Like, guys, at this point, your whole thing of, like, pros no more cannot be a real principle because Maniac played in majors. Lurpis has fucking meddled at, like, a World Cyber Games or something. You know what I mean? Like, it's outrageous shit. Maybe he didn't. Maybe he's just semi-finals. But these people be at the absolute top level. So, yeah, you're right. It's just a process. And the problem is, get ready, put a pin in it, guys, because this is going to age like fucking fine wine. In like 4 years, all of Reddit will be like, Scrawny and Lawrence are fucking boring. You can tell they don't care about the game anymore. They've all just made it. I think new Billy Bob X and fucking Slashlack, the new guys on the block, they're the new guys. And because I'm first and I support them, I think they're the best in the whole world. It'll be the same turnover again, sadly.
It's already happening with Launders and Scrawny. So then you're going to see, like, within a few months even, I think they'll start going, oh, the Launders, you know, this, that, and other. Scrawny, this, that, and other. And they'll just start picking them apart. And then before you know it, they can do no right. They can only do wrong. And then it'll be on to the next thing. So it really is that. I mean, it's almost like you can't help itself. And the thing is, like, I don't think that they are even themselves aware of what they're doing. So again, it's just like, you know, they don't know what they're doing. And so at the end of the day, once you've been through it, you take it much less seriously.
Yes.
At first it sucks, obviously, when you're getting
Yeah, because as you say, you take it personally initially, right? But then eventually you realize they're going to do this to everyone. Like,
exactly.
The joke is,
and once you realize that part, it's like, okay.
The one who gave it away to me was Anders. Because if people don't know, Anders and Moses, probably the most amiable people to ever work in esports. Like, there's nobody doesn't like these guys. So as soon as Reddit turned on these guys, especially Anders, and they were like, he's shit, but it's like, mate, it's the same fucking guy. Like, the joke of Anders is, he never lost his passion. It's the same guy. Like, he's just even cast the same way. Oh, you guys hate this guy.
Well, come on. This was because we started experimenting with it. Because Anders and I would talk about it, be like, what are we doing differently? And so for a while there, we ran the experiment where, because, you know, it's like we tried everything under the sun, you know, like super analysis, super in-depth, or no analysis, mega light. Like, we were trying all sorts of different things. And then at one point, we were just like, fuck it, we're just going to keep doing the same thing over and over. Like, we're just going to go back to what worked, and we're just going to do the same thing over and over again. And we could do literally the same thing, one broadcast, people would love it. The next broadcast, people would hate it, and we would not change anything. It would just be arbitrary. So at that point, then you really know, it's like, huh, okay, what the fuck? Like, how do you, like, I guess you just have to accept that this is how it's going to be. No matter what you do, you're either going to get praise or shit on, and it could be whichever way these people decide to wake up in the morning. So that was an interesting experience for sure. It's definitely something like casters. It's really tough when it comes to these sorts of scenarios. And this is casting. I mean, obviously journalism. You guys are cranking stories out, and so you're going to have metrics to follow. But because casters, it's really hard to tell like what impact you're having on the stream itself, unless you get a thread on Reddit or something like that. It's really hard to judge. It can get a bit mentally taxing because, like, if you're a pro, you're like, okay, I fucked up here, I fucked up there, you know, like I've got stats to prove it, and you know, whatever. Like, there's metrics you can follow in other parts of it. Whereas with casters, it really is all subjective. So if the community is hating on you, then that's pretty much all you got to go off of, is the community is hating on you, and it can get pretty brutal sometimes for the mental space. So that is one of those things. But to bring it back to Jackson, I just hope these guys land on their feet. I hope that there's a site that's going to pick them up, because I feel like there was some good, they were doing a good job, you know, cranking out content. We were always referencing them, and I think they did a good job staying on top of stories. So I hope the guys working there are going to be able to find another spot to go to and shit, maybe start one of their own or something like that. I don't know. It'll be cool to see it and cool to follow. Like, what happens with them next? So another one, excuse me. Let's just hop into the Hunden. Hop into the Hunden story. The Hunden fiasco. Because I put it here. So Hunden lawyer, this is my title for it, where Hunden lawyers up and gets his ban dropped. Astralis, his likely destination. I guess we just have to recap the article that Richard talked about in terms of the relationship between Hunden and Astralis. Creating content for some aim training thing.
I'll do it quickly. Basically, Richard did an article a few months ago now where he revealed that Hunden works for Astralis. By the way, already an outrageous story, because famously, Astralis, including Nicola Nyholm and some of the players, have been the most vocal critics of Heroic, Hunden, and the Hunden scandal, and whether the players knew that Hunden was cheating or not. And they basically called him out. It was even implied, if you remember, back in 2021, that it was Astralis that might have been part of the source to ESL that Hunden was going to leak those like anti-strats to them when it was going to be for IEM Cologne, if you remember that story. This was all around that. So as a result, stupid fans, at the end of this article Richard wrote, where supposedly Hunden works for Astralis, but not coaching, don't worry, because he's prohibited from doing that by ESIC. No, he works for Astralis designing tutorials for AIM Labs, which is like a program. If you don't know where you sort of test your aim out, right? Like, the notion was he was working, but instead of just leaving it there, like, right, that's what we're using for. Then one of Richard's sources from Astralis said something like, but when he's unbanned, we would consider, or we would hire him, you know, in like another capacity. What that means, basically, because all the dumbass fans got it wrong, all the fans on Reddit always, this is their position they take consistently, right? I'm going to say that whatever Richard Lewis, easily the most decorated and prolifically correct journalist in the history of esports, whatever he says, I'm going to say the opposite, and that he's wrong and a liar. And then they wonder, how will this age? Let's sit back on a fucking deck. You morons. But no one keeps score of nobody Redditors, because spoiler, you're nobody. That's why no one cares that you're wrong or right. So when they did this, right, they all said that last part, Semler, wasn't indicative of the idea. Maybe he was secretly coaching them. Maybe he would coach them. They all got into this big semantic debate about, like, what does it mean to be prohibited by e-cigar? You know, like, and then if you remember famously, Stryker waded in and was doing that thing where instead of just saying, hi, Richard, a much more veteran and better journalist than me and always will be, what did you mean by this part? Because I'm essentially a fucking amateur who's LARPing as being a journalist. So can you just give me a free lesson in journalism and explain what your work meant? Instead of doing that, Stryker just tried to sort of be like, but what about what you're implying by this? And then Richard was like, well, I didn't imply that at all. And then he was like, no, but it sort of could mean that, like, and basically, like I say, he could have just said, I don't know what the fuck you mean, so can you tell me? So basically, everyone took this position. No, it's nonsense. Richard's done that thing again that he always does. Spoiler, he never does this, where he takes like a tiny bit of a piece of information and he builds this whole conspiracy theory around it with all like weird implications, and it's so off base. Spoiler. When Hundon now has had the situation where Isak's going to reduce his ban because he's got lawyers involved and now he can be a coach. Guys, you remember what I told you a few months ago? It's weirdly conspicuous that at the same time Config got kicked out, right afterwards, they removed Trace as their coach but didn't announce a proper coach. They just brought like some academy fucking guy in to temporarily do the job who obviously was not going to be the main coach of Astralis with Device and Glaive and Zipnik. So I always said, weird how they're leaving that out, isn't it? Spoiler, they probably were just waiting to find out what was happening with Hundon. They were just like, right, wait, let's see what happens with the Hundon story, see what goes on there. And then what they've done now is, surprise, surprise, magically, Hundon probably just becomes a coach of Astralis now. Which, look, if his ban has really been reduced, we'll get into that in a second. Look, if his ban's reduced, his ban's reduced. If you serve your time, you're allowed to work again. My problem with that story, and I understand it doesn't really matter, Astralis does not care about being looking like a hypocrite. They're the org that has shown they are utterly shameless. Like, yeah, but like, let's be real. It is mental that Nicola Nyholm did that tweet all those years ago. Like, you remember, he tagged in every player of the Heroic team, and he was like, I want to see you guys in my office on Monday to explain what was going on in this game. Did that, you know, that like mad, like fucking almost like hysterical way of fucking tweeting. And then the joke is, years later, you hire that fucking guy to come to your team. That's so fucking pathetic. I just pity you that that's like your game. What a shit fucking plot that is, mate. It's just whack. It's not even a bad hire, by the way. He even probably will be a very good coach, if people don't know, aside from the shady stuff he did with Heroic. He has an incredible track record of finding talent, developing talent, bringing them in the roles, developing a game plan. This
is why you don't think Austin is to the future.
Yeah, exactly. No, exactly. In that scenario, you've got to be careful what you tweet. Exactly.
You know, and it also, you know, other bit of news, you know, that Config, I mean, it's a small bit of news, but we can definitely talk a bit more about it later, because I think Heroic is smart, shrewd, being very shrewd in how they're handling the World Finals roster situation. But, you know, just another example of like how you need to be a little bit careful about it, thinking ahead, simply because Config, you know, he also was one of those guys who was like, you know, fuck it, fuck these guys, and talking about Heroic when the whole scandal broke, you know, like, they deserve everything that happens to them, fuck them, blah, blah, blah. And it's like, oh, yeah, by the way, I'm going to stand in for them at the Blast World Finals next week. So, you know, like, go us. It's just, dude, it's so good.
So the jokes just never stop writing themselves. Like, really, Config, are you going to stand in? I mean, I know you're very proud of being able to do that again, but fuck, you know, get you whatever. You
know, he's just keeping them online. He's like, I want you all in my office. Exactly, Stark. To give you a job, basically. He's just like, yes, there's a man who understands how to do business.
Exactly.
You know what, Hundon, you and I need to talk. Let's go get a steak dinner together and talk this over.
Dude, like, I even did a joke like that back in the day. If people don't know, my joke was, once the rumor was, because I did this at last year when there was the whole thing where the rumor was he was going to go to Astralis, if you remember, right before he leaked the strats in the Google Drive. I even said, so essentially all we've learned from this is Nicola Nyholm is not mad at cheating. He's just mad at you cheating against him and not for him.
Precisely.
As far as I can tell, that's the only principle, and that's the line in the sand. It's like, hey, do it for me next time. Like, all right, fucking hell, okay.
That's all he cares about, that dude. I mean, it's just about getting results. It's just about getting results.
And by the way, guys, I am fully aware that Astralis is more than Nicola Nyholm, and actually there's probably other people who are doing these decisions now, but the problem is, on this show, we've already established Nicola Nyholm as the long-time enemy. He's just like the fucking Palpatine, isn't he? So we're just going to keep using him as the main go-to figure for Astralis.
A rough time for Isak, though, because we've got another story later on as well. Well, we can get into that after this one immediately. We might as well make Isak block. But, you know, there is that one... The one part that stood out to me, which is where this, it's like, it's clear they found a loophole. They found some kind of hitch, some kind of gap that Isak left in the armor, where the lawyers were able to get through and just pry it open and get Hundon out through that path. Because there was one line in the press release where it was agreed that Hundon will undertake relevant training, while Isak will review its policies and procedures to ensure they are consistent with good industry practice and fit for purpose. That says it all. Isak just can't, all they can do is catch L's right now. It really sucks to see, because if they are to make any kind of progress as some kind of governing body, they need to start putting some W's on the board. Because this is another one where it's just like, okay, it's very clear that if you are going to try and behave in a manner where you're going to regulate, then you need to be on the ball in terms of like all of the law out there. That, you know, the fit for purpose, good industry practice, right? If we're talking industry wide, that's a lot of ground to cover in terms of figuring out what works and what doesn't. Because clearly Hundon found some lawyers who were like, right, that's not going to fly if we want to use industry standard. And now Isak have got to let Hundon go and patch up that gap so that it can't be used again in the future, when if they are trying to catch somebody on similar terms. So,
I mean, how can they do the latter though? As far as I can tell, what fucks them, Sam, is there's no loophole. All that happened is Hundon just went to a lawyer, and the lawyer's obviously gone. Wait a minute, what would a governing body in esports have to do with whether you can work and have a livelihood? Like, you haven't broken a law, have you?
No. Yeah, there's,
you know what I mean? Like, as far as I can tell, like, put it this way.
Am I giving Isaac too much credit?
Well, the problem with this is another snake and banter topic. I don't want to cannibalize it at a 20-minute point there. But basically, the gist of it is Isaac is just a paper tiger now. It means nothing. Every single pro player above, like, tier 3, where they don't have any money, can just go get a lawyer, every single coach. And if they punish you, just go to them with the lawyer and say, unless you're willing to take me to court over this, like, reduce it to the minimum amount. Every single person can do that. I can't believe that.
They've just set a precedent where they don't even need a lawyer. They're just going to point at Hundon and be like, yo. I mean, Isak are going to post something, and the players are just going to be like, "Yeah, I'm showing up for practice tomorrow." Like, they're not even going to bat an eye. They're not going to miss a step.
I mean, Isak's just done, mate. It's like CSPPA. It was a good idea, and in practice, it doesn't really work, does it? Because, by the way, if no one's keeping track, I don't keep doing about every event, but I'll just point this out. Last fucking year, I believe it was, when ESL made that post in collaboration with CSBPA that they'd reached a historic agreement, or might not have said historic, but they reached an agreement that ESL games wouldn't run past 12 p.m. local time. Midnight. How many fucking tournaments? Every tournament ESL runs has a game that goes past 12. Am I wrong? Like, it feels like every single one. The joke is they haven't even attempted to stick to that assembly. They just routinely run over it. And what does CSBPA do? Nothing. Because it wasn't something you were going to be punished for. You were just saying, please do it. And ESL was like, okay, I'll get a free PR win and do whatever I want anyway. Like, the joke of esports, ESL knew this years ago, and I'll relate it to what they do with majors. I heard this years ago, right, which is when I was working with Flashpoint Assembler, they literally, before they launched Flashpoint, reached out to Valve and were asking them stuff like, you are cool, though, that, like, we're going to, like, run a league, and it'll be, like, semi-exclusive and buy-in, but it's not totally exclusive, and it's not, like, you know, and they wanted to check Valve was cool with it. ESL does it the other way around, mate. What ESL does is they just do whatever they're going to do, and then if someone like Valve has a problem, then Valve better contact them. So ESL's approach, and I'm sorry, this is actually a better approach in life, I have to say, is you just do whatever you want and ask forgiveness later. What's that famous saying? It's easier to ask forgiveness than permission, right? Something like that. You know what I mean? That famous, like, gist. That's what ESL does. So as far as I can tell, the approach is do whatever you want, right?
If you have no principles to live by, yeah, then I guess
I wouldn't do it. But I mean, it's like, put it this way, if you want, like, a short-term strategy, that's like the fastest version to get whatever you want.
That is like the eternal struggle, isn't it? Where it's just like, okay, you got chaos on one side where it's do whatever you want, and then you got principles on the other side where it's like, okay, no, we're going to try and live by these. And then that is it's just a different, battlefield, I guess, you know, that this is happening on. I mean, the other ESIG bit of news then, I suppose, I mean, I guess we don't want to waste too much time talking about ESIG if they really are just going to be utterly useless. But,
Semler. It's not like they've even done that many big campaigns. They did the coaching bug thing. They've done, like, a tiny bit that they tried to do with, like, Australian match fixing. They haven't even really been around that long, and already they've basically, as far as I can tell, lost a bunch of key battles in the war. Like, and in fact, the war almost feels like it's lost.
Dropped off the radar. The one thing that brought them back onto the radar for me was this whole whistleblower story that popped out, and that Richard has written several articles on now, covering in detail. He even got in touch with the whistleblower himself, and so finally, I think Richard went ahead and I think that this is going to be the last installment in this series where Alexei Yarabu-Kurlov continues to throw out wild accusations in his chats with the Sotos editor-at-large, Richard Lewis, who gets E6 perspective on the work of the self-proclaimed whistleblower. And so this is the latest article and probably the last article in this series from Richard on this whistleblower thing. And this is what brought E6 back on the radar for me. Like, I totally forgot about them and all the investigations that they had underway, etc. They were so quiet for a long time there that you forget that they're even a thing, and then all of a sudden this whistleblower comes out of nowhere and starts throwing shade everywhere. So according to the whistleblower, you know, ESIC are embezzling money, they're paying people salaries that they don't deserve, or they're coming up with random jobs like video editor, you know, paying them $60,000, you know, for a video editor. What do you need to edit videos for? And so Richard actually caught up with the head guy of ESIC, Ian Smith, who, you know, very quickly just put that down, put that to rest. Like, he doesn't know where that allegation's coming from. They don't have a video editor, and they're paying that. They, you know, he wishes they had $60,000 to throw around like that. But also that it seems like the whole thing stems from miscommunication or a failure in communication and expectations. And then this Yarabu guy just went off. But now it sounds like the real interesting bit, like, so, okay, ESIC, if we want to just kind of, like, put them on the shelf, fine, fair enough. But the interesting bit that I found interesting about this article, and it was kind of at the end of it, where after we get the part from Isak and after we get the kind of summary at the top, it would appear that Richard is being contacted by players whose teams are being contacted by this guy, by this alleged whistleblower. And it sounds like this whistleblower is trying to extort teams and players in order to make money on this. So I'll go ahead and just read this paragraph here. We offered to help him investigate, they said, but since he didn't want to do anything for free, we said that if we had evidence to ban our player, we could play, but the evidence he gave is not enough in general to do something to the player. We didn't pay him, and now he says we will not get any invites to tournaments. Would you like to help open the situation publicly and show who this person is? So Richard's like, yeah, okay, go on then. I'll go ahead and do it. But like, it sounds like this guy's just turning into an extortionist. So just esports things.
If you remember, we talked about this on a past episode because we've obviously covered all these issues. The problem that guy had, the whistleblower, I've said it on the past episodes, I'll reiterate now. As soon as he revealed, well, one of the reasons I know there was some shit going on is because I was doing it. It's like, then every word out of your mouth is fucking tainted. You have shown you are an inherently dishonest person and that you were disingenuous in how you, because you also think about how, I don't think people will get this. It's even worse than him just being a better / match fixer assembler. He did it while also being someone investigating betting / match fixing. Like, that's like being a corrupt cop doing the crimes that you do in that scenario. Guess what? You know, like, nothing that you shouldn't even be allowed to be a cop. And also, more importantly, every investigation you've done now, it was tainted by that. Like, you have other interests that we can't believe. You don't have integrity. We can't believe what you say. So the problem is, and also, spoiler, like, in that same article you're talking about now, this fucker tries to spin it on Richard and make it like, because Richard's not just believing everything he says at face value, maybe because the thing you're talking about, the video idea, he implies like Richard is taking a salary from Isak because he doesn't just instantly go, oh, okay, guy who's admitted he's a fucking corrupt piece of shit, match fixer liar guy. Oh, I won't just believe everything you say without evidence. Well, in that case, maybe you work for them then. It's like, at that point, mate, this guy just shows it. That implies to me he's not just corrupt. He might even be just... like, I'll just say it. He might even be crazy, mate. Like, there's something about this feels a bit off. I agree with you, though. It's probably more the cynical angle of, like, he just wants to make some money off it because he doesn't work with them anymore. So in this scenario, there's two ways you can do it. Like, one of the things you're talking about is this. Think about what happened. I don't know if you noticed this, but during the major assembler, a whole bunch of people kept talking on Reddit and HLTV about Wonderful, that like 17-year-old Ukrainian AWPer for Spirit, because he was one of the people that was cited that potentially maybe he did the match fixing, right? That cost this guy reputation, dude. People were like, who cares? He's going to get banned after the major. You know, it doesn't matter if he's good. He's probably being match fixing. Like, what this guy is essentially saying, guys, is if you pay me, I won't potentially ruin your reputation with no evidence. That does sound like a fucking protection racket. That sounds really dangerous.
Yes, and that's the whole issue with this whole cult of, it's just this mob sort of thing going on right now where his whole angle is just like, he's dealing with Isak, he's dealing with Richard, and Isak and Richard keep asking for evidence and more evidence, solid evidence, something you can build a case on. And he's going, well, you know, I have enough evidence to build a case. Like, I have enough evidence to like, what do you need all of this extra stuff for? You know, it's just like, I have it from this guy who says that they did it. That should be enough, right? And so the whole thing this comes from is him going out onto podcasts and getting attention, and then getting attention online where, all of the fans are just jumping on top of it saying, holy shit, this is going on. So clearly this guy, he's figured out that he can get attention in the public sphere, and that's enough. And that anybody these days, almost anybody is worth, you know, they're willing to do anything to avoid catching heat in public, especially teams, etc. Maybe even the real, I wonder the real angle. Cause I mean, he's obviously deeply tied into the CIS region. And you know, it's going to be CIS teams in particular that he's probably going to be focusing
on. Seems like
a
lot of the people he named are from that region. Yes.
Yeah. These CIS teams, it's like, dude, do we need any more trouble now? You know, he's probably seeing it as an example or as like an opportunity to put pressure on these teams, because these teams are probably going to be already trying to avoid any kind of heat that they can given the current climate. And so maybe he sees an opportunity there to try and put the screws on them and make a quick buck. I don't know. But it does seem so distasteful, this entire thing, just to actually downright, sounds like blackmail. Like, he's trying to just blackmail people now. So there you go. Yet another L for Isak. And, well, hopefully this is the last that we're going to hear of this guy and we can move on. So, and you know, on the show we can. So, next big one that was actually, pretty big news actually that dropped. And I'm going to be very curious to hear what you have to say about this, because as far as I've looked into it, okay, so it's, The big news that broke out was that Inters apparently is up for replacement on Cloud9. And it feels like that kind of comes out of nowhere, right? Because it didn't feel like it was any individual player. At least, okay, this is my like bird's eye view on the whole thing, was that it felt like it was more of a failure as a team, as a whole, at the major, rather than any individual player, unless we want to take leadership into question, in which case then obviously it all falls on Fanny as the IGL. But if we're looking for like individual performance or whatever, it feels like everybody had their ups, everybody had their downs. Shiro particularly had quite a few ups, but that said, you know, like it wasn't any one individual, at least that I could pick out. And so when the news breaks that Cloud9 are looking to replace Nefani, from an individual like performance rating, it felt like, okay, maybe he underperformed a little bit at the major, but then, you know, sort of Nefani, so that, you know, it's not like you could really like, you know, hammer him for that. But also, if you were to look at like performance throughout the year in terms of his role as Inters, as a support player for his role, if you just want to look at like HLTV stats, he's actually the top rated support player on LAN so far this year. So I'm curious, like, what's your whole read on the situation? Because I'm feeling like it never occurred to me that Inters could be the problem that I would say like this needs to change in order for the team to get better. Like, this is kind of catching me out of left field, if you want to look at it from HLTV, if you want to look at it from elsewhere. So I'm very curious to hear your thoughts on this potential change here for Cloud9.
Right, the big problem is there's a few angles to this. One is, if you just know team dynamics, typically the in-game leader is also the leader in the sense of like they get to decide who joins and leaves the team. They socially run the team. They often are the person with the connection to the team org even. So it means basically, spoiler, like you just said there, if I was to list what are the biggest problems in Cloud9, right? It's mainly a Maui point because he's the one who made it on Stake and Banter a few months ago, but it's a legit point. One of the number one ones that an analyst would say is Nefani calling correctly? Like, maybe when it's the big tournaments, he's not doing that good a job. And you see, it's not just that his stars fall off. Sometimes it looks like the system fails, and therefore it manifests as a star not having as good a game. Because actually, you look over the year, Axile and Shiro are probably two of the top five players of the fucking year, if not top 10 at a minimum. Like, these guys have been monsters. And so the idea is, if you're failing, like, go look at the numbers Shiro had when they got eliminated from this major. It's actually fucking shameful that they couldn't go further. So the question then falls, right? So we know it's not Shiro. We know it's not Axile. Hobbit's fine in the sense he's a veteran. I do think his numbers have dropped off, but whatever. That's maybe a questionable one. The Nefani one just seems like it's a big one. If you're making a list, right, of all the things that are a problem, you wouldn't get to Inters until like maybe fifth on the list or something similar. And it was never a pressing matter. The only people I heard of who want Inters fired is the morons on HLTV, because they only go off stats. And even though you're showing a support round stat, they go off things like how many kills you get, what your overall rating is. And yeah, the rating for Inters is never going to be good because he plays generally the shittest roles in the team. He plays the support positions and all the dirty work. Not all of them. There's a few spots on certain maps that aren't. Maybe he should get more frags on. But basically, he's never going to put out frags. In fact, one of the things I actually was impressed by about Inters when they were Gambit online last year is, for me, him and Perfecto are the new school, like, Zipnix-type characters. These are the guys where the fragging numbers in terms of raw firepower often aren't that high, but that's because their style isn't to frag. It's like to not die, to hold the site, to allow someone to rotate, to play a tough spot, but like get the one kill if it's a one and done spot. Like, they basically just play their role. And the idea is, if they do their job well, it just means that like there's one less problem in the team. And now when Shiro performs, you win. Now when Axile goes on, you win the game. Their job is sort of like plug the leaks of the ship, and then the other people pilot the ship and whatnot. So the problem I have in this case is, I get why an idiot fan looks at the numbers on what's his name? Fucking Inters, and just goes, it's not that good getting a guy with more fragging, because that will be how always a casual fan thinks about Counter-Strike. They just think about numbers. But the problem is, my analogy is, if this was like football and frags are goals, you're kicking out a defender to bring in another midfielder. But why are you bringing in a midfielder? Because the current central midfielder, whose job is to run the team, isn't doing its fucking job. So like, what I hear about this move is, as far as I can tell, Nefani's failures means Inters gets kicked and Nefani gets nothing done to him. Like, what the? I don't get that, mate. To me, it's Hobbit or Nefani should be on the chopping block if you're making a move. I don't get the idea of kicking out Inters. As far as I can tell, he's actually part of the structure of the team. And there's not. And here's the other thing. I know people were listing a bunch of players they think can be better from the CIS region. That remains to be seen. I don't know if they will be better in this particular team at doing that job. Because as I just said, I think he actually has a very specific type of job, which is a unique role. Not a lot of people play that role. It's not about using your crosshair. It's about using your fucking brain and knowing what your teammates are doing and how to come with them. I will say one last thing. The one area where I understand why they might kick Inters is he has played 3 LAN majors now, and unfortunately, the majors have been some of his worst tournaments. Those have been the ones where not only has the team failed, but he personally has had much lower numbers. He's had some really bad games. But I just think this, go and look at the rest of the tournament, online and on LAN. I think he's been pretty good in general. I won't say, look, it's not someone like I'm a defender to death, but I just think essentially, like, I think this is scapegoating. I think you've taken the player with the lowest numbers, the least status, the least famous player, and you just kick him because there's a problem. The perception is there's something rotten in Denmark. So you just kick him. It's in this case, fucking North America / Russia. And so you just kick it in as to make up for the problem. He's just being sacrificed up like some sort of fucking, this will bring the crops back again if we kill Inters, like the fucking Wicker Man or something.
Oh, we're going to pagan now. We're going to go to the pagan human sacrifice now.
Well, ironically, that part of the world, maybe that is sort of their ideology, Sam, if you look into it a little bit too closely.
I didn't realize they were from Mexico. Okay. I get your point. Like, it does feel that way too, because like when we were watching the major, it really did feel like it was more of a team as a whole mindset kind of failure. And when that happens, to me, that speaks of like of a critical crisis in leadership and in vision and being able to get people on the same page, being able to get people to believe, getting all that sort of stuff. That all points to the leader for me. It's not pointing to Inters. And actually, it's a really good point. It hadn't even occurred to me, but that's a really good point to bring up Hobbit, because Hobbit is also one of the guys who has really gotten a lot of support on that front in the past, where, you know, oh, he's the veteran, oh, he's older, you know, he's got a family, he's got all these things, you know, that give him a bit more maturity, perhaps. And so, you know, these are younger players, he's going to bring them up and he's going to take them under their wing. But you're right, if they keep mentally breaking down in these big matches when everything is on the line, and then you are looking to Hobbit as well, because, hey, Hobbit, you know, come on, man, like, you're supposed to be one of the more veteran players here who's supposed to be bringing the rest of the guys up and keeping them focused. And we have seen that in the past, and at least the Stockholm major, it felt like we saw a little bit of that when they were having trouble on the stage. But yeah, no, it's a leadership crisis on the team. It's not necessarily an Inters crisis. So unless their solution really is to just try and bring somebody who's going to hard frag, but like the vibe that I get from this team is that they're capable of fragging as hard as they do because they have such a system.
Firepower wasn't the issue. That was the weird thing. Yeah, that's
exactly
the problem.
It's like, yes, you're an exile. Even Hobbit still has his games. You know, it's like you have firepower on the team, and to put that kind of firepower into position also, it really helps to have guys who know the tendencies of those stars. And so you could, by removing the support player that is there to support, i.e. throw yourself in first or set the player up, get the nade, whatever, by throwing him out, you may have to sacrifice even more time now to try and get somebody else in. And then what's his point? Is he there to get more frags? Is that what Inters was lacking? Because it's going to take a while to learn how to play the way. I guess this is always the same question, though, when you have like a roster that's stuck together for such a long time. Fucking with that kind of roster is always so tricky, because then, you know, can you make a change, and how much of a system is it, and how interchangeable are the pieces in that system? It's a really intimidating situation. But I guess to give Cloud9 some credit, it must have been bad enough for them to actually want to fuck with the system, the results. And maybe they feel like this is the time, because they actually have, what, like a couple months before we'll see them again? Wait, am I? No. We're not seeing them.
The edges. They're not a blast.
Yeah, no, they're not a blast. Yeah, that's it. There is actually a good window for them before Katowice to make a roster change, and then I guess boot camp and get on the same page.
Because the problem is, if you don't know, Cloud9 is not a partner team of Blast.
They are a Louvre agreement team, though, right?
Yeah, that's ESL, though. But yeah.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I guess that's the one that really matters at the end of the day. Cause...
So yeah, you won't see it until next year, as far as I know.
So if you were going to make a change, I guess this has to be the reason.
I mean, to be fair, people always forget, Katowice has moved forwards now. I think Katowice starts like end of January or something mad. Yeah. Like, now we always think of it as March because that's what it used to be, but it's actually moved forward. There's still a few months. Yeah, it's going to be a while.
And actually, worth talking about, it looks like, at least according to ESL, This is actually kind of funny, but we might as well go ahead and interject and put that in there. It looks like that Katowice, you know, there's a bit of speculation as to whether or not Katowice would be happening with Russian players, and we were all wondering if the tournament was going to get ruined because half the teams wouldn't be able to show up with their stars, or some teams at all, i.e., you know, Virtus Pro or Cloud9. Were they going to be able to show up at all? It looks like they are going to be able to show up at all. They are going to be able to show up. According to ESL, there was a quote here. As of now, there is no local law indicating that any given team or player cannot enter the premises of Poland and therefore not participate in the upcoming tournament in Katowice. ESL statement reads, EFG remains compliant with all international laws and sanctions, and we will continue to monitor and reshape, blah, blah, blah. So, according to ESL, it seems like there is nothing in place that's stopping players from being able to get in. Now, the way that now ESL or HLTV do a decent enough job here, Stryker, funnily enough, does a decent enough job where he clarifies in the following paragraph, while Russian citizens cannot enter Poland through its external European Union borders by land and from outside of the Schengen area via air and sea, those with valid visas continue to be allowed to enter through other Schengen countries. This, for example, includes bordering Germany, one of many countries that are part of the bloc and continue to issue visas and allow entry to Russian citizens. So we're to the point where we're going to be smuggling Russian pros into Poland from Germany.
What? I don't know, what the fuck is this? Some sort of fucked up, like, bizarro underground railroad to get people to kind of eat it. Like, Carmack, just give it up on me, I know. Just give it up. Have it in a country where they're allowed. What the fuck is this?
What is this going on? I think that's such a, like, I was like, oh, so they can fly in, you know, they can just fly to, oh, wow, okay, they can just fly to Poland. No, they're going to get smuggled into Poland from Germany or another bordering nation with Poland. Like, what the fuck clown world is this that we live in right now where we're going to have to smuggle Russian players in to get them into an event? It's amazing. I mean, granted, I guess we'll get to have the event after all, but just the way that it's going to happen, it's such a weird, weird thing going on. I just couldn't help but laugh the first time I agree. I read that.
It's a total joke the way it's been done, and it is fucked up, but I actually think it's pretty legit in terms of, like, at least the players can play, at least we can have the real tournament. Because, like, let's be real, ESL's not going to about turn and cancel that tournament that they've clearly built their whole fucking sponsor package around and leave that venue. So they would have had to have the event without some of the best teams in the world, including the major win, etc. And then the other thing I would also throw out there is, I know Richard's talked about this a lot, it's quite frankly a disgrace that ESL keeps up that, like, personal sanction against these orgs. Because, mate, if you don't know, they've taken money from fucking Russian sponsors themselves, as far as I can tell. It's just pure hypocrisy. Like, actually, at the end of the day, you either care about that topic or you don't. And if you don't, shut the fuck up. You know what I mean? You've already got the money. It's like Frankie. It's like, you've already got the money, you rat. Shut the fuck up. Can you at least do that? You've already got the blood money. Can you just take the blood money and shut up? No, I must also tell you why me taking the blood money is fine and you are still human scum even though you turned down the blood money. Great. Brilliant. So we get a lecture and you get the blood money. Some sort of a fucking mad deal, isn't it? So I just think, like, the problem is, if people don't know, I mean, you saw this because you sadly waded into it without knowing what I was doing, right? Sevler, actually, if you don't know, guys, caught the most hilarious flack ever. Where Kozar tweeted about this topic. True, I did it in the most thawing fashion. I didn't just say, you know, electronic and Russian players should be allowed to play in Katowice. I did say, like, you know, if you can't see that this is just, like, anti-Russian bigotry from Paul, who, spoiler, I don't already have the best relationship with. And you can't see that I did that. Then your brain must be broken. Like, let's be real. I will admit the way I phrase things does bring on some of the response. But because I was getting mobbed by all, like, fucking Ukrainians, even though I never mentioned Ukraine because of the conflict, they were all in my DMs and messages like, oh, fuck, so you just think, oh, so, good, I'm glad Russians are banned. So when they were doing that, Sembler just did a tweet where he just wakes up and, see what's going on today? And he goes, somebody just tweets, what degenerates is Thorin triggering today? And all the, like, Ukrainian people just swarmed over Samuel's account, like, because they thought he was calling them degenerates. That was the one where I was like, you're running this one, mate. I'm out already. I'm tapping out. I can't do this. Like, because they were fucking, they were beating your ass in the quote retweets. That's right. They were going ham on you. You didn't even know what you thought. I was just beef with fans, like TSM fans and stuff, right?
It was what the fuck was the original? Oh yeah, because it was like some TSM, and also wasn't there was like some, there was like it was like a multi thing. There was like three things going on.
All right,
but it was like there was a trance angle, there was something else, and then there was this.
You're right. I think at the same time I had some beef going with some like SJW people who were attacking me. Right, yes,
trending, and so I just do degenerates as a whole because as a rule, and you know to be fair, as a rule. Degenerates, yes. I mean, if you're behaving in that fashion on Twitter, on social media, then as far as I'm concerned, you're.
I agree. So, yeah.
I had no problem with that, but it was fucking amusing because all of a sudden I had all these people going like, "Oh, you fucking what? You're like Putin supporter and all that." I was like, "What the fuck? Where'd this come from? What the fuck did I tweet?" That was great, dude. So funny. Listen. The reality is, I mean, again, to bring it home real quick, Richard did that's why I'm calling him Virtus Pro as well, because it really is just such a charade, this whole thing, that
for whatever reason, I feel like,
okay, we all know it's Virtus Pro. Just because they have a different logo doesn't mean it's not Virtus Pro. The players are still getting paid by Virtus Pro. It's all still Virtus Pro, but we're not allowed to say it. Like, what the fuck? And it's not Valve that are stopping it either. It's ESL and Blast. Fuck off, ESL and Blast. It is irrelevant. Let them have the Virtus Pro logo. You're all taking the money. You're all taking the money, and you're taking Russian money because Richard just did a fucking great video, and we talked a little bit about it in the past as well on 1xBet and their involvement with ESL and how ESL are still very tight-lipped about that. They don't want to make any comments, but you still see 1xBet plastered everywhere, and Richard went into detail on a recent video about the ownership of that org and just how fucking wild it gets. In terms of Russian ownership and Russian money, where it's just like, yeah, you guys are taking the Russian money. So how about just let Virtus Pro have the logo and let's just fucking go. If the whole point is just to put your CS tournament on, then just put your CS tournament on. Stop with the rest of it. Stop. So, well, clowns continue to clown. And, well, not so clown. Actually, I mean, to be fair, like Device, he definitely nailed it. Actually, he had a pretty good comeback. They didn't do the Eastbu tournament, which we thought, okay, fine, missed opportunity there to get in on an easy like step in to figure out what needs to work on, what doesn't, all that. Device does actually make a return to the server before the end of the year, which is cool to see, and he does it in fine fashion. They get a very strong start versus a team called Tricked, Danish guys, funnily enough, with Lucky on that team. And,
that's weird, because I thought he was going to be part of like a 59-man lineup and be about... Fuck right off.
Get the fuck out of here.
The joke is, Device played against Lucky while Bobski probably watched from the wings like, I used to play that game. Like, and Nikola Nyan was just like, I am the king. I created Counter-Strike. No, you just ruined Counter-Strike, man. That's all you did, you fucking idiot. And then here's the thing. Uh-huh. I like to imagine in this scenario that, like, it doesn't really work totally, but, like, Nikola Nyholm's the, like, fucked up Theoden, like, get out, Aragorn. And then fucking, obviously, Hunden's, like, his little grimo worm to like, master, come on, we got to get Isik back, master. He's on some, like, Igor shit, and he? I know it's pathetic, and he? What a rat. He's the new rat.
We need more impersonations, clearly. We're gonna get a grey worm.
I have talent for it, let's be real. I just have a natural talent for it. Mate, did you see that one that I did, like, the retweet of, where... Well, I made on By the Numbers years ago. I made some mad analogy. I think it was when G2 was benching Kenny S. And I was like, benching Kenny S when you can't get like a better AWPer, because Kenny S was like the greatest French AWPer ever at the time, right? I was like, that's like you finding out you have erectile dysfunction. And so you just say, right, cut it off. It's like, well, that's not going to solve anything, is it? Like, I had like a whole thing. This, oh, it was mental a bit. Some confounded it and did like a tweet of it. I retweeted it. Yeah, it's like one of my all time great, like mad analogies.
Get the fuck out of here. You did that. That's great.
It was a good one. Because I had a similar one on Twitter, guys. I said the analogy is cutting inters from Cloud9 is like finding out you can't get hard with a girl. And so just chopping your balls off. It's like, well, it was the dick that was the problem. It was Nafani that's the issue. Like, sort him out. Like, why are you chopping your nuts off? Like, they're essential to the equation, aren't they?
Do you think that's the situation now?
That's the vibe I get in it. It's like you're just trying anything except to address the real problem, which is the problem in it.
It's the story of a lot of esports teams' lives, unfortunately for them. I mean, they're gonna have to go through this process, and
you know, by the way,
guys are gonna be able to land on their feet.
We actually didn't hit this hard enough, and I realize we actually probably should have talked more when they won the major about that whole outsiders thing. Because that is actually mad what egg on the face of Counter-Strike and Blast and ESL that is. That a team that you will not allow to use their real org. I think fans are getting this mistaken here, Semler. You know, fans on Reddit just tunnel on the idea that until, like, the head people of VP literally just say publicly, we hate Putin in the war, that they're never allowed to be in esports, right? That was never the standard for whether the team could be involved. It's supposedly the idea that you couldn't beat the Russian economy. It has nothing to do with what you've tweeted or not. So the mad thing to me is this. Fans, for real, the same fans, remember, who want pro players to be paid and to not be mistreated, they seem fine with the idea that the org just pays all this money to these players to win a major, but without getting anything out of it themselves. Like, I think that's mental. Because to me, as soon as, like, I mean, obviously it could have been Na'Vi too, because they have Perfecto and fucking, what's his name? What the fuck is the name of the other guy?
Wait, Bit? Who?
No, Bit's Ukrainian. Who's the other player who's right. Russian?
Electronic.
Electronic, there you go. They obviously have those two players who are Russian. So, like, it could have been a Russian winning anyway. But the idea that, like, a team with, like, the fucking MVP of the major was Russian and people don't know. Like, why are we just fucking persecuting these players still? And so, to me, the fact that they won, that did actually ask a lot. I mean, put it this way, the first thing it did, because they got the Blast World Final, because you just get that for winning the major, is it already exposed the Blast partnership system keeps teams out as well, because obviously it's insanely hard to come through the showdown. So, like, I do think, like, them winning the major was a bigger deal than people made out. Like, a fucking Russian player won the major, guys. And at the moment, we've spent the last year, everyone trying to fucking limit these guys from playing, limit their career opportunities, their livelihoods. Like, do people not see it, that it's having no impact? And the worst thing is this. This tilts me off the face of the planet, Semler, where people have this condescending tone of like, well, I understand that, but it's symbolic. Not for the fucking players, it isn't, you twat. It isn't symbolic when that guy doesn't get his salary. It isn't symbolic when that guy can't join another team because you've basically made an esports iron curtain and locked him off from being able to join other squads. It's not symbolic where, unless you're the absolute best Russian player, where someone like a Cloud9 will go through that, like, shenanigans and rigmarole of pretending a Norwegian org bought them so they can buy you, or Team Liquid doing like, I'm not buying out your kid, he's buying himself. So unless you're super famous, if you're just a normal Russian player, the message from the West of esports is, oh, don't worry, we will benefit from the best Russian players, we will even take money from Russia, but fuck you. Why? Because you haven't stopped the war. Just you. And I don't care. People are going to do that angle again. Yeah, but all the Ukrainian people are dying. That doesn't help them. You are not helping them. You are not. In fact, the maddest angle of this, you know what angle I even thought of the other day, Samler? You know, people like Simple and Na'Vi, as far as I know, have given money to Ukrainian causes for the war effort. So logically, that means people like fucking Electronic and Perfecto, by helping Na'Vi win, help the Ukrainian side of the war effort. It's even actually not how you're presenting it. They actually potentially are aiding the side that you guys support. So I think that whole thing, I know people don't want to touch it because it's the third rail, isn't it? It's like a political minefield, but they won the fucking major, guys. Like, this has to stop. Because we've already had months and months and months and months of it. If it was going to have an effect, it would have had an effect ages ago. Remember, it was after Katowice that all this shit went down. How did it help make them outsiders all of a sudden? What effect has it had on the actual fucking what? None. Zero. Zero. So let's stop torturing fucking players for the actions of a government that they have no impact over.
Oh, but no, Thorin, don't you understand that they're all these players are owned by Russian oligarchs, and it's just, you know, we're making the Russian oligarchs hurt. It's like, if you think that the multi-gajillionaire oligarchs even know what the hell's happening with Virtus Pro.
Oh, it's nonsense, isn't
it? It's just like, yeah, I don't know, man.
And by the way, if your company is ESL owned by Saudi oligarchs, fucking miss me. Miss me on that one, homie. Because here's the thing. You know what, Semler? Here's a weird statement for you. Here's a cool one for you. Let me know when ESL comes out and publicly decries the war in Yemen.
Yeah, that'll be
why okay. Not? When they're going to do it? Never. The answer is never, by the way. Never.
I mean, the answer is never. I mean, they are sponsored by a Russian gambling website. So a corrupt one as well at that. So, I mean, you know, like there is no leg to stand on. That's why it really is. You really hope that this accelerates. Like, if you want to look at it from an accelerationist point of view, where it's just like, I just hope that this accelerates the collapse of all of this virtue signaling bullshit. And we can just go back to just being a sport. And so, you know, whatever's happening, like this is escapism. We're playing video games. Video games are supposed to be escapism. Competition is supposed to be escapism. It's something you want to focus on. Neurologically, it's not like, you know, just psycho. You just want to get so zoned in on it because it's you will. We're talking about guys who will focus on Counter-Strike to the point where they ignore everything else in life, right?
Yes.
So if we're talking about that, you know, that's all this is about. The wars, the politics, everything like that, just leave it on the outside and stop.
Agreed.
If you want to maximize your profits, what was it like Michael Jordan said that, you know, Republicans buy shoes too? You know, just like, if you want to maximize it, just don't even acknowledge any of that. Doesn't matter. Just run your league and you are separate from all of that. But it's because everybody always has to get that, you know, just has to have their chime in, say, no matter how many times you have this conversation with TOs as well, you know, where you're just like, listen, why are you guys doing this? You stand to gain nothing. You stand to gain, like, lose a lot. Why? And it's just like, oh no, but that, you know, this is just the right thing to do, or this is the thing, blah, blah, blah. It's always, it's such a frustrating scenario that we find ourselves in. And of course it's the players that suffer, or others that suffer, and it never really achieves anything of what they say it's supposed to achieve. So, hopefully we can just go back to just getting the Virtus Pro logo back in. I mean, I can't remember. I'm pretty sure I did retweet Virtus Pro afterwards when Virtus Pro had like a little tweet with some emojis, you know, when they won the major. I'm pretty sure I liked it or retweeted it. I mean, it's just like, can we stop with this silliness? Let's just move on. And so, yeah, well, I mean, Device, I guess he's stopping with the silliness too, because he's just fucking wrecked house, him and Blame F. It all, like, there wasn't too much to take away from this, from the fact that the team clearly needs more work. Blame F and Device both just smashed. Device showed up in fine form. Individual performance looked terrific. He looked great on his side of things. It's just clear that they're still trying to iron things out in terms of the team, in terms of like what they need to do to win. Glaive, Zip, and Mister all had their, had some moments, but overall maybe underperformed. And I suppose this is like as good as you're going to get in terms of a trial run, you know, a smaller tournament going into the beginning of the circuit next year. And this, they actually managed to pull it off. So good on them. Did you manage to catch any of the matches at all? Or did you?
I saw the results. You know? I didn't watch the games because it gives a fuck about those opponents. Basically, like, it's no surprise to me. Device is one of the only players in Counter-Strike history. I think he's even better than Simple for this, where his ability to keep his level consistent is unfucking believable. Like, he genuinely, when this guy retires, like, he should probably be someone for real who figures out like some sort of a sports psychology division of like how you run things, how you peak, how much you train, because his ability year on year is just impossible. Like, even last year when people are going to say he had his like slump, his slump, he was still a more than serviceable AWP. He was a very good player still. Like, he just wasn't Device, you know? So like, I actually thought for real, because if you don't know this, Semler, when he was for sale earlier this year, a whole bunch of fans were like, well, who cares? It was ages ago when he was good. It's like, bro, if you're out on Device, you should have no eye test. It's the most obvious player to reinvest in because you could, I mean, you're not really buying low because it's going to cost a lot of money, but it's just obvious he's going to be good again. Like, the joke is, remember the amount of money? The amount of money to buy Device is about the same as it cost to buy Monacy, right? Monacy had never done anything. We didn't actually know if he'd be good. I know Device is good, so that doesn't surprise me at all. He did well in his comeback, mate. I assume by the time they actually come to real play next year, he'll probably be really good again. I'm looking forward to it. Like, I know the Astralis lineup is whack, but I do think like Device coming back could be cool.
I mean, for sure, it would be awesome to see it. I mean, I think there is, you can make a point in terms of the mental aspect, because his claim was that he was out due to mental reasons, mental health reasons. And so that's always something that can come back. You know, it's one of the hardest things to put away. Yes. And so I think there is a legitimate point for criticism there where you can say, okay, maybe mentally he's not going to be 100% and there may be some weaknesses there, but at least in terms of this, and in terms of this showing, he looked terrific. So it bodes well. And it does kind of look like he could potentially put to rest those concerns, those legitimate concerns about his mental well-being and whether or not he's going to be able to compete again. Because if he's looking this good against this kind of opposition, if the rest of the team gets on the same page, it does look like they can actually do some work. So that's good. It's exciting. And of course, yeah, we hope. It would be awesome to see Device back at the four, especially after the year that he's had. I mean, it would be terrific to see him back in the mix, the 2 years that he's had now. So here's hoping.
Now, if you want to bet crypto on esports or the World Cup for that matter, then how about the other first-time deposit bonus that esports bet runs, which is their 100 USDT bet forgiveness. So bet an amount up to 100 USDT for your first ever bet on the site. And if you lose, just go to the Discord, discord.gg/esportsbet, message the mod mill, say Thorin or Last Free Nation sent you, and they will credit your account with whatever your original stake was up to 100 USDT.
And so that wraps up our miscellaneous news. You know, we could, I think what we should do is we should just kind of take a gander at Blast World Finals, because that's going to come up next week. It's kicking off Wednesday next week. Wednesday and Thursday, the groups will be played out. And as it happens, we'll be recording again next week, Thursday evening. So the way that I envision this is that we can go ahead and take a look at the groups and kind of give some thoughts on that, because it's going to be interesting. There are some cool matchups. And then as it happens, it's all going to line up nice and neat so that the groups finish pretty much as we would go live with the show. So we'll be able to talk about the groups next week and really keep an eye on things there. So that's cool. Definitely looking forward to that. And the time zone. Everybody's hating on it, but I'm loving it, man. I mean, of course, we are incredibly fortunate to just get to stay at home and watch Counter-Strike and then talk about it. So there is that for sure. Obviously, if you got a day job or you're at school, it's going to be a bit different because this is happening all throughout the day. But that's what VODs are for. But at least, you know, from our perspective, it's like the matches are kicking off at like 7 in the morning. So the schedule is just perfect if you're waking up early. You'll be able to get right into it right off the bat. So starting the day with Counter-Strike, elite tier Counter-Strike at that. So already, I mean, it's looking like we have the format. Nothing crazy there. Each group, it's two, four.
Exact same as fall finals, basically.
Yeah, same as fall finals. All matches are best of three. You top the group, you will go straight to the semifinals, and then you'll have a third or second and third. If you're fourth in the group, that's it. You go home. Second and third will battle it out in the quarters, and then you move on to the semis. And you know, so it's the same as the fall finals, same format. And best of three is through and through, which is very nice because it means that we're just going to have some very consistent, or we should have some consistent results here. So that bodes well, at least. But was there a particular matchup that jumped out at you in terms of like one that gets you stoked? Because the groups, I think, are fairly even at a glance.
I mean, you can't really go wrong with fucking Na'Vi versus Vitality and Simple versus Evo. It'll always be one of the fucking great matches to watch, right? Who doesn't like watching that? And then also, I'll just say, it's a very stacked event. Like, basically, aside from OG, who snuck in there because of what they did at, like, the spring one as well, I think. Like, basically, aside from OG, every other team there are the teams you'd want. These are the biggest teams in World Counter-Strike in 2022. Like, even though I get that the major upset everything because teams like Fnatic and Mouse Sports and Furia had bigger performances than you expect, over the rest of the year, even the events around that, like, think about this. So G2 was in the playoffs in the four finals. Heroic, obviously, he won it. FaZe was in the finals. Liquid was relevant. If you go to EPL, G2 was a semi-finalist there. Vitality won it. Liquid was in the finals. Like, these are all top teams. The only team we're really missing is if this was a perfect tournament, I would take out OG and I'd put in Cloud9. But that's about it. Aside from that, this is a very stacked event. So it's the last event of the year. The only downside, which we'll lead into in a minute, is obviously the Heroic angle. Like, a dream would be you'd want Heroic to be full strength and see, like, you know, are they for real? How would they battle against them? Because I think if you're looking at this event, the storylines are pretty damning because, as you say, the format is so forgiving that, like, here's how it works if you're these teams. So if your team's like FaZe, who almost did win Blast Fall, we were doing the final, obviously, and Na'Vi, well, they want to show and end the year, like, we really were the best teams. Let's end on a high, and especially FaZe, you want to get a win so that your last win wasn't Cologne, right? So those teams need to win. If your team's like Outsiders, you want to prove that the major wasn't a fluke. You want to actually remember what everyone said. You only beat Mouse Sports and fucking Fnatic and Heroic. You know, there's a shit of teams. No one cares. But I tell you what, if you beat FaZe and Na'Vi and fucking, these are the teams that get you the legitimacy. So they have a way to end the year with legitimacy. Teams like G2 and Vitality, right? Vitality was looking like a world beater when they won EPL. Since then, they've been whack. G2 hasn't got it together yet. Everyone knows it's going to be rostering. So for those teams, I feel like you have to do a deep finish. Probably semi-finals is what you're looking at. Then you look at, like, Liquid. I don't think the expectations are huge for Liquid, but they, when they were in the finals of Pro League and they were this close to winning it, they wanted to believe they were a true contender. So tell you what, this is the field to prove it against. And if you're OG, anything that you do is an up. If you come last place, no one will blame you. But if you get any upset wins, you have massive. That's a lot of stock you can gain in that moment. Like, people really respect these wins because for OG, every person you play is a legit team. Like, as I say, really, we can segue into it if you want. The only downside is, unfortunately, Heroic doesn't go with the full strength team. Like, obviously, Staun, who was the MVP, at least for me, of the fall final, he didn't get to go, unfortunately, because of this whole situation. Do you want to talk about that next?
Let's talk about it because I think it's a key. It's a big story piece, and I know that Astralis, Blast are definitely going to be regretting that this is how it's going to happen. Yep. But I really thought that this was shrewd. It's a shrewd move on the Heroic side of on the Heroic side of management on it's a management side of Heroic in that. They are going to take their star player, as you say. I mean, one of the top performers, absolute monster, San, who's had a really rough year, and in the sense that he had a death in the family, and
last year, but yeah, obviously that was like, yeah. Do you want to give that side of the story, by the way? If people don't know, like, no one, there's not actually been a reason given as to why they've given him time off, but they just made it sound like, you know, you wanted some time off at the end of the year, so we're going to give him time off. Basically, what happened was, last year, if you rewind, the Blast 4 finals, that world final last year, a couple of days before the event, unfortunately, tragically, Stown's brother, who used to actually be a coach in Counter-Strike of that Fragster's team with his other brother, Dragonfly or whatever, committed suicide, unfortunately. And because of the nature of the particular tragedy, they unsurprisingly pulled him from the event and he didn't play the event they used to stand in. Now, there's been no intimation that's why, as far as I can tell. He's not attending Blast World Finals now, but I would just imagine, because they made it sound like he'd asked in advance, I would just imagine if the anniversary of that's coming up, and I actually thought, by the way, you could potentially touch on this, you've revealed yourself, you've had a similar tragedy. It's not that, like, it's still fresh in his mind necessarily, but when the anniversary comes, it's going to make you maybe think about it, right? And in this case, you know, we're near Denmark, you'd be in, like, fucking Abu Dhabi or something. Like, you're going to be all across the other side of the world. I could see in that scenario where you just say in advance, look, let's agree, I'll take that time off, I'm just going to be with family then. You can get a stand-in. Obviously, you didn't know you'd have just won the event beforehand. That's all, I'm sure, pieces that are moving that you couldn't know about. So, like, I don't blame them at all for doing that, if that is the case. I'm just speculating if that is why, but it just seems like the logical reason why. I wouldn't blame him. That's so what would you say to that? So, like, does the idea of the anniversary of it, or thinking like a similar, like a, in this case, a reference point, like that was the event that it happened at, would that actually make people think about it, do you think?
Yeah, no, that's precisely what I thought was happening. In that a year is nothing, especially when it comes to when it's something as brutal as that, where it's somebody that passes suddenly, especially a brother that passes suddenly like that out of the blue, nowhere. I mean, that's just a sledgehammer to everything. And so, and then you're competing, so you're talking about having to constantly stay focused throughout that year and just dial in on work. So, I mean, I think the whole thing, you're coming up on a year is nothing when it comes to mourning. So, he probably still hasn't even processed it really because of just how demanding his lifestyle is around work. And so when, you know, I think it really is shrewd on Heroic side to say, okay, you know, we're absolutely going to give you the space here. And I think it's shrewd on Stalin's side as well to say, okay, it's coming up on a year. I'm going to spend this time with family. This is about that time that it happened. And you don't know how he could react. It could be that he isn't going to be really suffering from it. It could be that maybe he has processed it a lot and all that. But like, it could also be that maybe he hasn't. And so when it is a year and you're coming up on holidays, it's Christmas. I mean, that is like,
you might just want to support your other family members though, to be fair. You might just want to be there for your mom and dad.
Exactly. You might want to be there for your parents. I mean, your parents, your sibs, like you just want to be there. So, I mean, it makes perfect sense for me in that context that you would, especially when it's like Blast World Finals. Listen, I mean, it's not about the money for these guys. They make fat paychecks now, and they're already winning in prize money, you know, just massive, massive prize money. So they're totally fine in terms of a money thing. It's not a money thing for these guys. And so it's just, you know, do you win Blast World or not? But we're not talking a major. You know, we're not talking like the truly prestigious event. Even Blast World Finals isn't a truly prestigious event. You know, it's like Cologne, Katowice, a major. Those are pretty much like the S-tier events. And then you have Blast kind of catching up. So I just think it makes
them look a bit amateur, don't it? That's the problem, like you say. Blast, I mean, we've talked about in the past, similar. One of the arguments I made, it's a pretty banger argument if you think about it, was if everyone hates Best of Five so much, well, Blast's never used it, so why doesn't everyone revere the Blast finals? But they don't. They do still treat Blast like it's like this much below, as you say, kind of it's a cologne. So the problem I have is they've always had a problem, whether it was like a few years ago, you remember before the online era, they had that one where it was like four teams in Middle East somewhere with a double in bracket, which was a bit whack. Then they had this one last year, which again had a bunch of stand-ins, which made it, because Nip had a stand-in for Device as well, so that made it not as good. And then now this one, which on paper you've got almost your dream pick of teams, has another thing where the team who's just won your last Blast event doesn't go with the real lineup. So unfortunately, if you are Blast, like, man, you just keep eating a shit sandwich every time with this bloody event, because you're trying to establish this. Like, the dream if you're Blast is, whether people care about the fall files and spring, you want this event to be considered right with Cologne and Katowice, because like the absolute pinnacle, not a major, but outside of that, the biggest events in the scene. Like the dream would be the circuit becomes two majors, Katowice, Cologne, and this world finals. But at the moment, it just has never managed to capture that feel yet. So I'll also be interested to see, quite frankly, if the games are epic, maybe it starts to make inroads. Because at the moment, it just feels like another event, I have to be real.
It does. And then for those who care, you know, it's also an event that's happening in Abu Dhabi, in the Arab Emirates, in you know, that Middle Eastern region. And so that is always going to be the question of like, okay, now we're going to see, you know, who's going to go, what's going to happen. IEM Riyadh is right around the corner. That's going to be coming up next year. You know that that's in the books. So there's that aspect. I mean, this isn't the end all be all, but I did a poll not too long ago in terms of like asking fans, you know, where, you know, do they care where the money comes from or not? And the vast majority said they didn't care, that they would watch CS anyway. So I don't think it's that big of a chunk of the viewer base, of the fan base, that's going to care about whether or not it's happening in the Middle East or whatever. But that is still a thing where it's just like, it's not happening in a place that has been established over the years, like Cologne has or Katowice has. That's what makes those places S tier, is because ESL know how to run events there perfectly. And so there shouldn't be any issues with running it in the venue, and you can really build it up. So Blaster got a 3-year deal with this Abu Dhabi thing?
I am looking forward to seeing, though. You'll notice this, you remember. I'm looking forward to seeing if Cadian brings that armband with him, though.
Tweeted that, dude. I was just like, technically, up, as soon as I saw it, the first thing I tweeted was just like, I hope he's going to see, you know, I hope to see that.
I mean, logically, he should, right? That's what he believes in. Yeah, why shouldn't he? As far as I know, by the way, technically, Saudi Arabia is not as strict as, it's not like the Qatar thing at the World Cup. As far as I know, people, someone said in Formula One, people have worn like rainbow flags and stuff. But even so, will he have the courage of his convictions to do it? I don't know. We'll see.
See, I don't know. You opened up that can of worms this time, Katie, and unfortunately, it's on you now because you risk nothing. You risk nothing. You're in fact completely aligned with all of the power structures in the West by doing that in a place like Denmark. Like you risk absolutely nothing by wearing that rainbow. In fact, you just only get praise. You will only get, you know, pats on the head. And so, you're right. If you're going to make that kind of play, now go and do it in a place where they throw gays off of rooftops, and we'll see, you know, like how that goes, you know. So, that'll be interesting to see whether or not that. I mean, the Middle Eastern countries have they still have like the courage of their convictions, right? Whereas in the West, we don't know what the fuck's going on. That'll definitely be a point that's curious to see. But as far as Blast World, they have a 3-year deal with the Abu Dhabi Gaming Group, and so this is going to be, at least unless something radically changes, this is going to be the recurring world championship location going forward for the next 3 years for Blast. So they damn well better hope that this is a huge success.
What happened was this, Sam, I can actually reveal now. It was all a misunderstanding as usual. Someone just got confused. I said, Blast, I can't wait to get rid of you. And they were like, can't wait to get to rid of you. Yeah, we'll host the event there next. Whatever, you get the joke. Listen, I didn't say it was a good joke. It's just it was one of those ones you throw out there, see if it works, you know. It's Riyadh anyway, so whatever.
All right, well, I mean, that's the Blast World that's the Blast World side of things. I mean, we got some like the matchups right off the bat are going to be pretty slick. I'm actually really looking forward to seeing whether or not FaZe bounce back strong after that last result, because I think that FaZe kind of need to hit the ground running here and just blast through this group, top the group, put any speculation to rest as to who's the top dog. You know, Outsiders, you had your moment. Now it's us back again, because they're in the same group.
I mean, that group is brutal as well. That's a fucking hard group.
FaZe, Outsiders, G2, Team Liquid. I mean, that's not a fuck around group. And there's no stand-ins in that group. There's no weakness in that group. That is going to be a hard group. So FaZe I feel like FaZe just need to smash G2, put it to rest, and move on into the winner match, where I can only assume that they're going to go up against Outsiders. Liquid have shown some power spikes, but even with Yekinder, have you heard this rumor? Actually, have you heard this, that Yekinder is taking over some calling roles, depending on who they play against?
I mean, at this point, I wouldn't be surprised if the next PR story is like, actually, the next Team Liquid players are being grown in a vat in a test tube now, and Yekinder will instruct them, like their pater, from their birth. Like, because he is the only one who can transmit the gnosis of Counter-Strike. Then give me a fucking break. Just shoot people in the head with the AK, you twat. Stop fucking pretending like you're in some fucking Pygmalion shit. Like, now, Elise, that's not how we do it, is it? You put the buck on your head and you walk in a straight, like, fucking give me a break. This guy's just tilting me. Just get on my tits, man. Let's get on my tits. I will say this. I do think that Team Liquid has been a little bit uninspired tactically. So, like, I wouldn't mind the idea he's like secondary calling and contributing some ideas. That's not a bad concept. Yeah, why not?
Set them up for an upset in this first match, because you play against your old teammates. There's always that angle, especially if you're in a position to call on your team. You're going to know what your opponent, what your old team want to do. It hasn't been that long since he's not been on the roster, so that could really be an interesting match to kick things off. And that is going to be one of the opening matches of the tournament. 7 a.m. CET. Ooh, that's good. 7 a.m. start for that our time. So 10 a.m. start their time. It's 3 hours ahead if you're a CET.
Luckily, Stewart UK doesn't play a profession anymore, so that's
not anymore.
All okay. If everyone remembers that story.
How dare a professional have to wake up early in the morning to play? Get out of here with that business. And then on the other side, Group E, Na'Vi, Heroic, Vitality, and OG. So already OG probably not going to be on that similar power level to Na'Vi, Heroic, and Vitality. And then also Heroic, I mean, to be fair, we have to mention that, so we kind of like did half of the story there, because like Stavin, well, most of the story to be fair, but like Stavin taking a step back, he's going to spend time with family. They decide to bring in Config to replace him on the team for this event. So Config actually getting a chance to perform way earlier than I thought he would disappear for 6 months, you know, go out into the desert or something, reinvent himself, do the FPL grind, and then come back and like get a spot on a team. But it's lining up for him to get a crack at competing right out the gates in one of the big events of the year. I mean, that actually surprised me quite a bit, because I thought by reading the twit longers, you know, by reading the explanations, it sounded to me like he was going to be out of action for a long time in terms of recovery, you know, recovering from everything that he's had to go through.
Still was a few months ago, to be fair. He's had a few months.
He's had a few months now, huh? It's just so weird how time flies, how time passes as quickly.
The only thing is, though, I will say, I actually think this is a great move on both ends. There's another point I made on Sacred Bandit, so I won't go crazy on it. But basically, the point is, if you actually even look, he's not even a bad role-for-role fit with the types of things that Stan was doing in their team, mate. Like, it actually looks like if he plays like... if he has the space created for him by Tessess or a fucking Shush, he'll just come in and clean up like fucking Stounder. They're both really strong players. So I actually think it's basically a good chance for Config to show that he's good without, remember, there's no downside. He's not going to join this team properly. He's just standing in. They need a player because of some extracurricular stuff that has nothing to do with Counter-Strike. So they're not replacing Stown. Perfect for both parties. And as an outside crack, if Config ends up being good, it maybe even gives them a dark horse chance to still do some at the tournament, mate. They could go deep in this particular tournament. Why not?
Yeah. Now, precisely.
Now, should we do the comedic part, though? Because there's a bunch of comedic elements to this. One is, I won't be able to find the tweet now, will I? That's the problem. I won't be able to find the tweet, but basically someone did a banger reply where when Heroic announced this, some random fan just was like, oh, nice to see that you're expanding and moving into a Street Fighter.
That's good.
Because think about it, fans. Obviously, he chased down the street to fight that club promoter, didn't he? So that's fire. Whoever wrote that tweet, that is actually fire. So there's that. And then there's the other angle, which is if people saw, you referenced it earlier. Of course, Config has done a tweet in 2021 where he basically says, like, if they knew about it, fuck them all. And then literally, little, like, middle finger emoji. And because he's Config, don't worry, he'll just walk in there, waltz in there without even thinking about, like, hello, go after him. Hello, guys. Like, give me a break. Why are you people so ridiculous in esports? So they're so ridiculous in it. It's ridiculous.
I guess, you know, everybody's got to get in on that moment, you know, like, gotta get
so
that clout.
Stupid, it, though, I know.
And at this point, I guess it's almost like it's a, you know, because it all doesn't seem to matter. It's like, I don't even think that anybody on Heroic is going to
take it
seriously.
I don't think anyone cares about that now, no.
You know, like, nobody cares about it. Like, nobody is going to care about it. Nobody's going to hold him to it. Kadian isn't going to square up to him and be like, so, you said something. Like, there isn't going to be any of that. They're probably all just going to be like, oh, yeah, whatever, let's play. And then just go from there, which, you know, fine, fair enough, I guess. But it is Heroic, and it is going to be them with the stand-in. And like you say, you know, Config it's a golden opportunity for him. It's a win-win sort of scenario where he can show what he's capable of, and if it goes against him, hey, he was just a stand-in. It's just about getting his feet wet. So
like, there's no downside to it. Like I said, it's only upside. It either works or who cares? It was a one-off anyway.
What do you make of Vitality's odds though going into this? Because shit. We also got Na'Vi, where you got, like, the last time we saw Na'Vi play, you had Simple acting like he wanted to strangle SDY, which was one of the weirdest things ever to watch. It was like the return of old Simple. Why you bully me?
Have you noticed that? I said this a while ago, but like, one of the reasons I don't even take it that personally now that he was so rude to me is I really think I was just a canary in the coal mine somewhere. That moment onwards, he has just been a dick to everyone out the gate. Like, I was just the first in line. Like, I mean, I get it because he obviously lost that major and they haven't won when he told me that. But like, mate, this guy's just been on one this year with understandable reasons. We've shaded in some of the context in the past of the conflict and his family and that. But even so, I agree. Like, some of the things that we've seen on camera, like, dude, it just seems like he's just like openly disrespecting that guy while playing in an active live game with him. Like, it's so bizarre because like, imagine how much it must feel like shit to be the player who's going to get replaced and still having to take a bunch of abuse and lose the game with that guy. Like, come on, man. Like, I agree. It's like the old Simple. It really is. We've gone back in time.
Yeah, it's and like everybody's just standing there as well. Like, nobody's saying anything about it. Everybody's just kind of letting it happen. SDY is clearly just trying to ignore it and do it.
The joke is, mate, you've met Blade. For good or for ill, the thing about Blade is he's not like a super social guy. He probably doesn't give a flying fuck about anything outside of the game. He's like, Semler, this doesn't involve the server, though. He is still playing entry in the game. Like, yeah, we know Blade, but we'll talk about the other context. Like, it doesn't seem like Blade cares about like the behavioral stuff. He just lets them do whatever they're doing, doesn't it? And then the rest of them all, you've seen it in Na'Vi. You've all seen it. They all just sheepishly sit there like, oh, Simple's on one again. Bloody hell. But it's like fucking school. Better keep my head down so the teacher doesn't pick on me. Like,
dude, the camera goes to Electronic, and Electronic looks like nothing is even happening. He's just focused on the game. Like, okay, what next? You know, he's probably got his, he's probably listening to Simple raising his headset, raging his headset. He's like, yeah, okay, hold on. Smoke's here.
He's probably just like, what is this, a day with ending in a fucking Y? Yeah, no shit. That's my life for the last few years. I know.
Dude, you listen to those Na'Vi comms, like on a normal comm, like the way that they comm, it's so fucking hectic. I feel like I'm listening to Overwatch or something. You know, it's like an Overwatch team just fucking shouting nonstop. So maybe if they're all the way up here all the time, you know, it's like Simple raging at somebody. Ah, whatever. Maybe he's just calming. Like, it's just the normal behavior. No shock there. But okay, so I mean, this is setting it up because we're going into this where you've got Heroic with a stand-in, Na'Vi, who have clearly there's clearly some friction there on the team. I don't know what the hell's going on, but it's not the best performing Na'Vi that we've had. And so, question I want to pose to you is: do you think that this is Vitality's group to take in this context? That that they are the full roster. They in theory have the firepower.
Here's the problem, Semler.
Can they do it?
It segues into another point, which is, think about it, guys. How else can I even say it than this? Last event of the year, Blast cannot catch a break. They want it to be like the cloud, like this is the last chapter of Top Counter-Strike. Biggest event. It'll be the first tournament that uses the Anubis brand new map that no one's ever played before. Brilliant. And spoiler, Vitality was a fucking Dust 2 team, so it ain't great news for them, is it? Like, it's brilliant for people like Rogue who banned Dust 2 anyway, but like, it ain't great for the Dust 2 teams, is it? So that's already going to hurt Vitality. That was a map that they were loving, and obviously French Counter-Strike always loved Dust 2. And then the other thing with Vitality, though, is like, it's all in their hands, in my opinion. Like, the problem they've had is they just haven't figured out how to get the best out of Sphinx. He's not the Sphinx from Ents at the moment. They hit the ground really well at the beginning, but after that Pro League run, it's looked pretty bad. So I have to say, if they fix that, if they've got some sort of a solution, a role swap, moving a different position, something about the if they can mix that up and get more out of him, they could win this event. The problem is, the way they looked at the last few events they've been at, yeah, they did look a bit lackluster. It was the Ziwu show or bust. And spoiler, if you watch the major, even Ziwu busted a couple of times towards the end. Like, it wasn't that great. So actually, I could see it. The problem with Vitality is I feel like they're a complete crapshoot. They could either come last place and look whack and everyone will be asking for roster moves. Or they could, like, I don't know if they'll win the event, but they could come like top two or something. They could still do a big deep run. They've still got Ziwu. They've still got Sphinx. They've still got all those veteran players. So they're a team I'm very interested to watch, but I don't really have any sort of like vibe. Like, oh, I can feel like they're gonna have a big tournament. Like, I have no fucking clue where they are at the moment. Yeah, lost to sea.
I mean, you could really just get that super powered Ziwu because this isn't the major. This isn't the highest pressure sort of scenario, right? He usually tends to fade in the high pressure scenarios, and this shouldn't be one of those. This should just be like another event to cap the year.
Of course.
There you go. You move in. So in theory, it could set up for a Zywoo super performance where he's just topping the rating out of the entire tournament and Vitality isn't winning, but it doesn't matter. Zywoo's at the top. Could very well be the case. I mean, and Vitality do kind of live and die by Zywoo, so it still is the case that they really do depend on him.
Yeah, I just looked it up, by the way. In the last 3 months on Dust 2, Vitality had a 75% win rate. They can't catch a break. They can't catch a break at all.
Oh, that just, but that just brings that up again, where I was just, that was, as soon as the Anubis announcement came, that was one of the first things that I tweeted out as well, where I was like, listen, could you just close the year? Because you ran an entire year on an entire format on one map pool. Can you just close the year out on that map pool so that it can stay consistent and so that we can have a consistent thread throughout the year? And so Vitality, you know, it's like the fall thing has actually been fairly kind of like, you know, fairly compact in the grand scheme of things. So it's like, could you just finish it out on this one? It's like, of course not. Of course you will have to fuck with the veto going into the grand final, coronating, like the coronating event of the year. We'll fuck with the map pool going into it just to make sure that things are, you can't actually have a consistent thread to build a narrative off of, because fuck the narrative. We're just going to do Anubis, and we're going to play Anubis because hopefully we'll get a few more viewers with that. Frustrating, because it felt like there was an opportunity there for Blast. I mean, Blast, you're going to kick off the year pretty much next year. You're going to get Katowice, and you're going to go straight into spring, and then you're going to have the Paris Major, so people are going to see Anubis. You're going to get to have it then, and by then it'll probably be playable. Like, teams will have figured out how to play around it. But instead, now we're gonna go ahead and trash the map pool for your capstone event. Such a shame.
The only way this could have been better is obviously if somehow Astralis was there and had to play against Heroic with Config. That would have been so good. That would have been too delicious, wouldn't it? I know.
But no. Wasn't meant to be. Heroic actually saw to that, didn't they? By eliminating Astralis in the showdown and getting wrecked. So, there you go. Well, I mean, as far as predictions are concerned... actually, we should probably just do predictions real quick, just so we have something to go back on for next week when we come back after the groups are done. But all right, I'll start because I think FaZe actually do come out swinging. I think FaZe are going to get that redemption arc, even though they've got the group from hell. They're going to come out swinging and they're going to top this group, and then it'll be pretty much as it's lined up. Yeah, FaZe, Outsiders, G2, and Liquid at the bottom of the pack, and in Group B, I will put. I will put Vitality at the top of the pack. I think Zywoo could hard carry him. So Vitality, Na'Vi, Heroic, OG. We'll go that way. What do you think?
Right, I definitely am take. I actually think FaZe Outsiders are the two that get out of Group A. But the problem is on the Outsiders one, I do think there's a chance. I actually think it's Liquid that could maybe upset them. Liquid and G2 on paper should both be better than they are. But like G2 just doesn't perform. So I'll sort of say they won't make it because they haven't shown me enough. Liquid could potentially do it. But yeah, I actually think Outsiders, as long as they can play their style, they should get out. The other group's the really tricky one because, like, as mad as it sounds, I think Heroic with Config might make it out, Mick. I just feel like they actually, it's an interesting mix. I don't think there'll be any pressure. So I'll take Heroic to get out. And then it's between Na'Vi and Vitality. And the problem is Na'Vi looks terrible, but then Vitality also looks really destroyed. So I'll say I'll take Na'Vi and Heroic just to be safe. But Vitality is very capable of getting out of that one too. I think the group specifically sort of actually makes it more interesting in that sense because it's just uncertainty in Group B, isn't it?
It's chaos. And then, of course, like you say, you have that upset potential with OG, who have nothing to lose and everything to gain.
Yep.
So they could just
show up.
And they
have a pretty skilled lineup, let's be real.
You know, fuck a best of three up. Yeah, dude, Flames looking good. I mean, just hoping to see a bit more out of this roster, to be fair. Dexter's kind of been on the ropes a little bit lately, not really been coming in and hitting hard. So hopefully they figured out how to get him comfortable. But I feel like Flames is a fun guy to watch. He's been doing some good work. And yeah, no, it's... You want to see the OG players do well. It's just a matter of them getting on the same page and figuring it out. Nexa also individually has really been struggling lately. So hopefully he gets his feet under him and they end the year strong. I mean, if they could even pick up a single win in this group, I mean, that would just be a monster result for him to end the year. So cross fingers. But yeah, that's the show. Or at least that is a part of the Counter-Strike show. Now we're going to go ahead and start answering some questions here from the Grog Coin holders who have, through holding Grog Coin, they are supporting the show, so big shout out to them. Big shout out to guys who have been subbing on Twitch, and also to Jerky's Minion, also for the gifted subs. Thank you, brother. Appreciate the support as always. But as far as the Grog Coin is concerned, if you're interested in holding Grog Coin, you can hop on the Discord server, and on the Discord you'll find a channel dedicated to it. And if you hold a certain number of Grog Coin, you'll get to ask some questions each show. And so we actually have a decent number of questions to get to tonight, so we'll just hop right into it. Let's see. How can I set this up to make sense? There we go. All right. So, Santiago Lafarga, to what extent do you agree with this statement? All interactions are co-created. This is... All interactions are co-created? All interactions are co-created? I mean, in the sense that what? If you had two people, just the fact that that person is in that and is in the area, he is lending a hand to the creation of whatever interaction you're going to have. Say if somebody were to run up and shove the other person, just the fact that that person is in that area is enough to say that he lent a hand in creating that scenario. Is that what he's getting at here?
The problem with the question is, because he's tried to be too smart for his own good, the question falls apart, as you say, on the word interaction. What does interaction mean?
What kind of interaction are we talking about here?
If what he meant was something like, if the statement was like, all social interactions are co-creation, then it could mean all sorts of things like, oh, your perception of the moment matters. And also, like, both people have to, like, be involved in it. And it's like the meeting of the two minds becomes a third mind, like Burroughs and Ginson's work or whatever. But he hasn't said any of that. That was a way smarter and more interesting and compelling answer, but as usual, I'll just editorialize and take shit questions and turn them into good ones, like some sort of fucked up question alchemist. So there we go. There's a good answer for you. It's worth your money. Next.
There you go.
It's the DMV. Next.
It is the Santiago. That's pretty much it. And it's just like, what kind of interaction?
Yeah. What else could we say? I know.
Because like the first thing that I think of is literally just somebody running up and shanking somebody and be like, okay, so they both had a hand in that, including the victim. And I'm just like, actually, I think the guy running up and shanking the person probably had more, you know?
It's like the way these questions like have become some sort of mad gotchas. So like, and now the questions are like, people often ask, what is love? But I want to know, why is love? It's like, brilliant. All right, great. Well, you paid your money, so shut the fuck up. Yeah, go on. What's the next question?
All right, BZ. 2019, Mao Sports was a team that didn't need to make a change to become successful. They just swapped some positions. Are there any top 10 to 20 teams that have the personnel and should look to shuffle? If so, what is the swap you would make?
He means don't make a player change, but do like a role swap. Like the obvious one I just mentioned is Vitality. Like it feels like there's two angles in Vitality. One is, I'm not sure what the role would be yet. They've got to get some sort of more aggressive role for Spinks. He plays too passive at the moment. And then the other one is they could obviously just keep Apex, but just swap leadership to Magus. So I think, to me, Vitality is the obvious one, because I could see a world where you could just make role swaps, no player changes, and go to the very top of the game, especially right now where wide open the top is. You could just go to the top, mate. Aside from that, I agree, though, it's rare. It's why Virtus Pro was so legendary, because they really did never kick anyone and just take turns like, right, now you're the agile. No, I'm the agile. And they just did it like at the right time and they sort of revitalized the squad. If I'm looking at other teams... Because obviously I'm not going to take teams like outside. They're all really good now. I'm going to take teams that are like more flawed. Like an obvious one to me, they won't do it, unfortunately, is in my opinion, if Furia put more emphasis on Safe as an AWPer, I think they could be a different type of team. I don't know if they'd be better because they seem like a rifle-only team, unfortunately, but that's one you could swap around. Aside from that, okay, I don't really think there's any others. I think most of the others need real roster moves.
That's an interesting one in terms of the Furia point.
Because it's just the one thing they're missing, you know. Like, the rifles are already amazing. So if I were them, I would be trying to work on a world where it doesn't fuck with Kayserat and Yuri, but let's get Safe more involved. Because if you do, I think that if you unlock that, I could see them being amazing, mate. I mean, you saw how strong some of the rifles were.
Everybody else is far too structured in terms of who's doing what. I mean, one thing that you could potentially do would be on Nip to swap Rez and Essatag in terms of the AWP, but they've already tried that, I guess. Essatag... It's not working.
Actually, I was watching some Nip games the other day as well. Actually, I was rewatching some of the Blast ones. One of the things that makes that team work as well is because, dude, like the cool part is this: they don't do it hard. They don't make res AWP every round. Some rounds, for example, similar like on Nuke, a map that's not that great if you're not the absolute best AWP. They just rifle sometimes. He just uses a rifle, and obviously he's a brilliant rifler. So it means sometimes they just run five rifles and actually they can get away with it. And then actually is open. The more I watch it, it's actually pretty decent. Like when I watch it, you wouldn't know he wasn't an AWP. Actually, he's doing a pretty good job. I don't know if he can do it long term because obviously the great AWPers are the absolute best players in the game. Yeah, and also, yeah, you just eventually, like, you have to reinvent yourself. But, like, for right now, they're actually a pretty canny team. And there's a lot of maps they play where you can run five rifles. So it's all good. And Essatag actually is pretty much like, if people don't know, he's another player that is better than his stats show. I actually think he's a pretty, like, cerebral player. It seems like he knows what he's doing.
Yeah. He's clearly, I mean, you have to be in order to play all the different roles that he has, right? Where you just kind of, he does seem to be this chameleon where you can just kind of put him anywhere and he's going to be able to get you something out of that situation. So that's why I'm still kind of like entertaining the idea of maybe role swapping there, just because Essetag could do it if necessary. The obvious one that I always think of though is the Apex Megisca switch on Vitality. Because Megisca, I mean, it's just like, we need to figure out, is Megisca a caller or not? He seems to think he is, and he did have a track record of it in the past, and they did get decent results with it. So it's just like, you know, if it's not working out with Apex at the helm, just put Megisca in there and put Apex in an entry frag role or something like that, and let it rip and see where it goes. All right.
I'll give you one more. Ooh. The other one that you could do is, in theory, you could role swap, because obviously Valde has like looked very hit and miss in Ents when they've tried to put him in fragging roles. I've been told from the people around him that actually Madden is the player who could like do way more if they took him off some of the like more supportive element that he does. So maybe you could make that switch as well, because obviously Valde's done that himself. So I could see that potentially being a move. I just don't think they'll do it.
All right. Jerky's Minion, what's your best advice for people who seek a new path in life?
Yeah, here's the problem. I might be the worst person to ask about that, because in life, I've always sort of switched up whenever I needed to, and I've always been following almost like it feels like the same thread. It's just it went through different industries and different jobs. So I've never really been someone who had to like sit down like, wow, shit's going the wrong direction. I've got to drastically swap it over. So I think that's a very hard question to answer.
It is. What do you say? Well, it's not exactly like there's one thing that happens. I mean, I've pretty much radically changed. I don't know. Like, I was actually trying to entertain this. I was trying to think about this earlier, whether or not I've changed my opinions, or whether I've always held these opinions. It's just that before I had all this programming in front of it, which wasn't really letting me see it, you know. But now that I've managed to strip away, right, the layers of the wool, right, now it's like, oh no, actually, because there's some stuff where I think you know, I've always had problems with authority and stuff like that, you know. It's just like back in the day it was like, oh, you know, you're working for the man, you know. I used to you know, rib Trance about that because he's working for Twitch, and I'd be like, oh, you're working for the man and all that, you know. And then it's like, you know, you come full circle back around where it's like, no, actually, I do actually have a problem with like the mega corps and the government and all that sort of stuff. So I mean, like, you know, it is like I don't know if I like there's that idea of like whether or not it was like that all along, or have I actually changed in terms of a person and, you know, seeking a new path and all that, or was this the path I needed to be on all along? It's a really hard question to answer, because I don't think that there's any one thing that you can say like this is just this one thing.
What I would say is this, similar, like to me, in that sense, it's a bit like when people ask, like, how do you find your passion in life? It's a bit like that question, isn't it? Like, what I would say is this, is like you're saying, it's like, I don't think you can't sit down, in my opinion, in the original position, so position A, before you've changed your life, and sort of plan it all out and go, right, what I'm going to do is change completely. Like, I think you have to try it, don't you? You have to try. What I would say you should do for real is just try and, like you're saying, decondition yourself for whatever you don't like about your current life. Try and see, was some of it programming? Did some of it come from your childhood? Was some of it from your job, your religion, from your family? Figure out the part you want to remove. And then what I would say is just with an open mind, try a bunch of different things. Figure out, like, is there some hobby you want to try? Is there some work thing? Is there some passion you have? Is there some profession you're interested in? Just try it. And it's not until you try it you're going to know if it's for you or not. I think you're going to have to try it for a while and fail and succeed. And I think eventually here's the key thing I would say. It's more like that process will get you to where you need to go eventually. I don't know if it'll start there, but I think eventually you'll figure your way to the thing you meant to do. That's what we've kind of done with our lives, right?
Through the process of elimination. I guess if there was one thing, now that I think about it, there is one thing where that really changed how I started to look at things, was just trying to take responsibility for everything in that sense, right? Like, I mean, Jocko got really popular with that whole like extreme ownership kind of thing, where you just like own everything around you. But there is some truth to that. And then, of course, you kind of like follow that thread and realize, you know, it's just. If instead of putting blame for everything on everything around you, if you just try to take as much of that on yourself, just to try and take responsibility for as much of it as you can, don't seek to put the blame on others. Try and understand like how you could have done better. That could be a good place to start, because I feel like that definitely was as soon as I started to try to apply that to my life, that changed my view on quite a few things and made things a lot easier and more satisfying. All right, Cheesecake Enthusiast. What do you find to be more tilting than long tech pauses? reading Twitter sometimes. Reading Reddit comments, reading Twitter. That can get pretty tilting. Yeah, because I don't know, long tech pauses. I don't know, dude. It's just part of an event. You know, you take them in stride. If anything, it's kind of a shame. It kind of took away from the ability of the commentator to bond with the audience. Because back in the day, we used to have DDoS, the days of DDoS, where a match could last an hour and a half, dude. And sometimes you just be sitting there for 30 minutes, 45 minutes, just vamping while some pros trying to figure out how to. I remember Forrest had to finish a game playing on his phone's 3G. Because he was just getting DDoSed into oblivion, and so they needed to finish the match. So we waited for half an hour for him to figure that out and all that. And so that's where a lot of stuff like, you know, Anders and I talking about every bench on Inferno or just exploring the map and just vamping and shooting the shit gave us an opportunity to just have fun hanging out together and get to know each other better, but also for the audience to get to know us and everybody. You know, it's just like you get a community feel from it because everybody's kind of just sitting waiting for the game to kick off again. So there was actually a really positive element, funnily enough, to the whole DDoS era where, you know, from our perspective, we got to bond with fans and we got to bond with each other. You know, it was really wholesome, right? But that's something that you don't get anymore because you as a commentator, you're not looking at the chat all the time. You're not getting interact with the chat directly. And then also, you know, everything runs so smooth now. It's just kind of, it's on skates. You know, you're just kind of going through the motions and you don't really have to vamp or fill or fuck around as much as you did in the past. So if anything, the broadcast has kind of lost something you know, viewers today will never know that they're missing out on. They never knew what it was before. So, I mean, what do you think about that?
What was the original question?
The original question was, what do you find to be more tilting than long tech pauses?
I will say as well, I agree with you, partly because it's just been the industry when I've been there. I mean, the joke is long tech pauses essentially are what made Thorin famous, because that's when I just used to go podcast mode and go ham with all the banter. And that's where all the classic clips from Face It and Gfinity and all those events come from, and Dream Hacks. Like, that's where most of the downtime was. We had carte blanche to do whatever we wanted, me and Richard. So they don't bother me that much, actually. I would say the number one thing that triggers me currently, and this is very fresh from both the Major and Blast 4 Finals, is this shit where every single fucking round where there's a bomb defusal, they just cut away and just assume he gets it. Like, they do, guys, and they're not cutting away to something important. They just cut to the crowd.
Yes,
like, they don't even show the guy going and starting to defuse. And A, at the Major, like, I've been pointing this out, they missed one. Defecto literally couldn't do one. Yes. And then B, there've been some really close ones at Blast that we just have to take. Oh, well, I guess you got it then. Like, you don't even get to see the hype of, like, seeing him attempt to go. Like, I think that's crazy. Cause like, what is the real problem I have? This is why it triggers me, is what is the upside? Why every single round seeing a crowd person? What does that do for me? It's just, I feel like it's such a shit trade. You're only talking about waiting, like, you know, fucking 0.5 seconds more or something. Like, give me a break. Come on, man.
Well, it's just this, dude, okay. I mean, yeah, that's...
That triggers me off the face of the earth, mate.
Dude, and then Blast did it too. And I was like, what the fuck, Martin?
Like, become like the matter, aren't they?
These are supposed to have producers, because I was giving an excuse for ESL. I was like, well, you know, guys, you know, most of the time they hire remote they hire new producers each show, and so maybe the producer doesn't know Counter-Strike, doesn't know what we want to watch, you know, maybe, you know, right? Like, I was trying to, because usually what's going on is they literally are just following a checklist. There's a show flow, and you just go A, B, C, D, E, F. Okay, end around, start over, A, B, C, D, E, F. Like, that's how these guys operate, so that everybody's on the same page. And so it's very straightforward, easy to replicate, easy to run, especially through long days. Problem is that obviously, exactly as Thorin says, if you actually want to watch the Counter-Strike and you don't give two shits about the crowd in the arena, you want to watch whether or not they have money to buy nades this round because this could be a critical round to the economy or whatever. Like, you want to watch, you want that period where I can watch the buy round. And so I don't need to see fans all the time. But one thing that I noticed that a lot of what these tournament organizers are doing now is because they don't have any of that side content, and they clearly don't have any, they don't give any importance to that kind of viewership either. They want to make it as important as possible they want to include the fans as much as possible, the arena fans as much as possible in the broadcast, so that they can potentially, I guess, sell more tickets down the line. Because if they make it like, oh, you have a chance to show up on screen, you know, maybe you're going to show your sign, you're going to be all clever and witty, so this is another opportunity, you know, this is another reason for you to come and like watch the event live and be in the arena and all that. So I can, it's just, that's the only thing I can think of, is just pandering to the crowd in the hopes of selling more tickets down the road. That's why they have to fucking show us the fans every single buy round.
Dude, at this point in time, why are the TOs like ESL and Blast? Why does it feel like they're just desperate for us to know they have fans? Like this, this feels like that shit in school where there's that kid like, no, I have got a girlfriend. You just don't know her. She goes to another school. Like, why are you hard selling me on that? Yeah, we get it. There's fans. Fuck off and let me watch the game.
Exactly. Exactly. That is the thing. You know, it's like the fans should just show up every now and again. It shouldn't be this thing that's just constantly cut to, but. I don't think that they have producers that know, and then I don't know. It's there has to be somebody jiggling the shoulder and just saying like, "This is how it's going to be." And unfortunately, you know, that's just the way it is. But it is very annoying. So we'll see if they do the same thing here at Worlds. I don't even know. You know, are they going to have fans in the arena? It's going to be interesting. I really wonder how this event's going to go for Blast. Okay, so Chinulada, what's your fondest memory in your career?
A lot of times. The problem is everyone wants me to say like burning Shaquille O'Neal or whatever, but like it probably isn't that, to be fair.
I mean, that's what stands out, but it's like what's fun, like
your, yeah, for me, what's my favorite moment? Yeah, exactly.
I mean, fondest to be fair, it's still like, I guess if I had to think about it, it's still like the good studio days, just because those were such mad days. Those were so much fun, and it felt like everything was possible. Like you were just, all the options were there. It was a totally wide open industry. Everybody who was working in it wanted to be there for the right reasons. Like there wasn't any bullshit. It was just, everybody was just interested in doing esports. Everybody was a fucking nerd. You know, everybody just wanted to be there to do cool shit and like make cool content. And then living in that house was wild. So that still has to be one of my fondest memories, is just thinking of the good studio days, you know, with the lads just living in the house, just getting like, just living the esports life for like a year and a half. It was fucking wild. I can't believe it. I still can't believe we did it. Like, I still can't believe it was a thing.
I've told this story before somewhere, but I don't think I've told it in exactly like the detail. I'm going to tell it now. So I'm not going to tell every detail, but I'll tell you a bit, right? Basically, one of the players in esports who the whole time, I mean, if people don't know, he was an active player from like 2003 onwards. It was one of my favorites of all time, is obviously the legendary Russian Quakemeister, fucking Cooler. The legend, right? One of the all-time greats, like a mega thinker, character, super veteran at this point in time. If people don't know, he was even on top in Quake Live and Quake Champions more recently, like as recently as like 3 or 4 years ago. So he had like something like 14 years where he could be at the absolute top of his field. So legendary figure, like one of the all-time greats. Well, basically, what Cooler used to do back in the day in Quake was, what, by the time Quake Live came along and he was already a veteran, he was like the fucking godfather. Like he was the most made man in the scene. And what he would do was, depending on who he was friends with or who he was beefing with, if he was friends at the time with Avek or Cypher, these were like the people who ran in his little circle and were like proteges of his. Depending on who he was friends with, he would like let that person be like his like room partner. When back in the day in like 2010s and 2011s, we all had to share rooms, didn't we? Or if we went to Colonia in some hostel where you just did two people in a room in some fucking old German couple's house. So basically, in this time period, I can't remember why. I can't remember if it's because he was beefing one of those players or they just hadn't come to, maybe they were coming to the event the day after. But basically, when I went to this like hostel at like some event at like CBIT, I was coming from SK Gaming, and obviously people don't know Cooler played for Mouse Sports, and they were the two teams that shared the same office. Like you've been there back in the day, it's a different one now, but they shared the same practice with. So I already knew Cooler from when he would go to there to the boot camps, and I would travel to the SK office, stay for a night, and then go to like events in Germany, like at CBIT and Gamescom and stuff. So I already knew him, right? And I'd already done loads of interviews with him as well. And basically, when we got to this event at like CBIT, we came to like the hostel and people were like dividing up, like, right, we're gonna go over here. Cooler just turns to me, and I guess because like whatever, Cypher or Avek wasn't there, he just goes like, if you want, you can share with me. And I was like, all right then. And if people don't know, I never told them that, but Cooler was definitely my favorite player. So I was like, all right then. And at the time, I wasn't Thorin now. This was like 2011 or 2010 or something. I was like the fucking super nerd, like big, like afro style hair. I used to have mad fucking hair, people don't, because I was on camera. I used to unironically wear like Lakers jerseys and like big fucking Penguins hockey jersey. I just like absolute trash, because at the time, I was on that fucking mad copium that all nerds are on of like, I'm not so superficial. I care about, you know, physical things and aesthetics like you are, lower form of. I am about the intellect and the mind. And if someone can't accept me for that, then they are not worthy of my presence. Like, I was on that nerd bullshit like that. Because at the time, it's a way of covering up your insecurity. So I also looked mad. So I go along, right? And I won't reveal all of it because obviously some of this is private. But all I'll say is it was really mad because Cooler started doing that thing where I wondered, maybe, you know, we're just going to like read and like talk a little bit. And then go. He was even doing that thing like it was a sleepover, just asking me all about my life and stuff like that. So like, I remember at one point he goes like, you have girlfriend? You have girl? And I was like, yeah, you know, I was seeing someone recently or whatever. It's going pretty well. And I just remember him going like, ooh la la, or something, saying something mental like that. And at the time, this is why I'm bringing this story up. Because at the time, the whole time, I was just there going like, am I still in like a mushroom trip I had like 4 years earlier? This has just gone really out of control. Like, how can this be real life? Like, why am I here? Like bonking with the Cooler, and now he's telling me ooh la la about my love language. I remember just thinking, it's not gonna be, listen, it's not even that this is like the best, this is just the weirdest shit ever. So that's a pretty memorable moment. There you go, that stands out. You like that one?
It's a good memory, dude.
Not bad.
That's so good. I love it. All right, what else have we got? Architect of Korean esports based Joe, if you could run CSGO. Huh. Whoa. Okay. If you could run CSGO global esports, what would be your circuit?
I think he means if we just had power to encapsulate, what would we change?
Oh, okay. So in that sense, like, because I was thinking at it from like a geographical.
He maybe also means that's like. I mean, I guess he's asking like, would you go to the Middle East? Would you go? It's like the question Frankie's been asking. Would you go to the Middle East? How much money to go to the Middle East? How much money to go to the Middle East and go where they kill all your friends? Your friends are dying. Your friends.
About those friends.
I know exactly.
No, they're all esports friends, so competitors. It actually helps her. All right, if you could run, I mean, that is still like, what would be your circuit? I mean, to be fair though, it like over time it has really narrowed down nicely where we have the two majors. I would tighten up the majors so that they don't take up a fucking month and a half of the calendar each time. Probably just bring it down to like 3 weeks again, 2-3 weeks, and just have it be like, just bam, like, here's the world championship, get it done. And then that opens up some more of the calendar. Obviously, if you could avoid having this monopoly that ESL has, if you could still have three tournament organizers again, I think that was still the best in terms of production, because everybody was pushing each other to do better day in, day out. When it was face at ESL E-League, I think that was probably like the peak in terms of productivity and production level, in terms of quality of the events. Like, it really was a wild time to be in CS. So if you could actually get back to where you had just like the two majors and then actually have standalone events that don't need to take 2-3 weeks to run, you go back to a week-long event, and then you can actually have like a really interesting variety of events to pick from, a variety of formats. It could be really interesting again. But I think now we're just going to go into this monopoly. I think it's going to be ESL that's going to be running the show, and then we'll have the two majors. And then if Blast can keep up, you know, good for them. But I don't think Blast have got, you know, the Saudi Prince back in them, so... could very well be that ESL are just going to be the last guy standing here by the end of next year. What do you think?
Right. Here is what I would do. So the main problem in the circuit, as far as I can tell, is when people want the player breaks, right? Because the problem is they want a summer break. Okay. That one's fine. We can make that one work. But the problem is the other break they want is they want Christmas off, don't they? And they want the new year. So if we're going to do that, we make those the two player breaks. So it doesn't have to be August. It could be like July, whatever. That means my ideal circuit is that the major always goes right before the break. So yeah. I would have my major in November. That would be like one. I would have another one right before in the summer. So maybe it ends in, I don't know, July, so that you can have August as your player break. Sure. If I do my two majors, so I've took my two majors, I've got my two player breaks, and I'll put those into my calendar. So roughly I'm taking like 3 or 4 months off just with those. In the other months, I would basically run. I've looked it up. I think it'd only be able like, I think it could be like 5 or 6 tournaments. I would run 5 or 6 tournaments, but I would basically make it that they're like quite uniform. So I would essentially, I've told this story in the past. I want it to be like Formula One. I want it to be like every month there's a tournament and you get 3 weeks off between them. So you practice, you get your scrims in, and they could be in a different location if you want, like Formula One, or they could be the same. It's up to you. So it could be one in Spain and then one in Germany and then one in Denmark. You could do whatever you want. And the idea is you'd have like 5 or 6 of these. You'd have your two majors, And that's your circuit. And you got your two player breaks. So you'd have a proper two seasons because you'd end on the major. And these other tournaments, the cool thing is, this is why it would work, guys. Because the reason Formula One is a brilliant sport to follow, I'm not a big fan, is because of that cycle. There's only one a month. So you have all that downtime for all the drama, the stories, into it. But you know every month it's coming back. And then the rest of the month, you've got your life free and all the rest of it. But that one big event, you can tunnel in on again that month. So it's like a consistent drip feed. And then in this case, you'd have the big majors to end off the season. So I would do something like that personally. What I don't like at the moment is Counter-Strike is still on that clown show shit where we'll have like 3 months where we have like three tournaments and then we'll have like 2 months with one tournament in it. Like, what's that? Like that's what kills the hype and the storylines.
We're in a weird place where it's like you still have leagues and you still have to, and you're trying to balance leagues, standalone tournaments, and majors.
And think about how stupid this last major looked. This last major literally came after we'd had one event similar. We had EPL, and then Blast Groups, and then the major just came. Like, that's not the way you want a circuit to run. What you want with the major is it ends the season. That's why Cologne, by the way, was better than a major, because Cologne was the end of the season. And so when FaZe won it on this grand high that everyone was going ham trying to win Cologne, then you have the player break. Then you feel like, right, that was a chunk of the year. At the moment, what makes it suck is the player breaks feel like they're just willy-nilly compared to where the majors are. That's what kills the circuit for me. I want the major to be like the crescendo, and then you rebuild after the break. And it's the perfect time, let's be real. Think about how like TI and Dota works. The major's the perfect time to make your roster move afterwards. Like once you know you're bottom the major, that's when you cut the guy. You don't want to do it like a week, but like two events before the major. That's fucking stupid, isn't it?
So that would simplify so much if you could actually make those two changes.
You could even, by the way, if you did that, you could even do it League of Legends style because you'd know when the breaks are. You could even build contracts so that you can have an off season, like everyone in the player break. That's when availability comes up and people negotiate. You could even do it that way because you know in Counter-Strike, we have a weird esport in that sense that we've just got contracts going all over the place and no one knows which ends when. And so the pieces that move around, it's really tricky to know when people are available and they're not.
Okay. Ace, what
we should
is your
get going if we've got loads of questions, so keep going.
Yeah. No, we have like five of them left, but there's some more simple ones here. We don't have to give like all out. Ace, what is your breakfast of champions?
I think I've gone over this in the past. I actually don't believe in breakfast. I actually think that whole like breakfast about part of the meal of the day is just some like, as far as I can tell, it's just a psyop from when those fucking wankers in not wankers, because Kellogg actually invented cereal as a way of preventing masturbation if people don't know. If you ever look into it, as far as I can tell, it's just marketing that you're supposed to have breakfast. Like basically I prefer to just like, I'm fat, so I don't do it for like health reasons. I just fast. I just eat until I eat my lunch basically. I wait an hour or two and I eat lunch. Mm-hmm. Don't do breakfast personally.
I do breakfast because I just need to fit more calories in. If I like so I do favorite breakfast is always going to be the Americana, pure Americana, pancakes, bacon, eggs, coffee, give it to me. Like, and I do actually, cuz I found Tingre protein pancakes fucking awesome. So it's like protein powder that's just a little bit, you know, and then you just make those. So you're getting your protein in with the pancakes. And then you get some eggs and you get some bacon. And I have that a few times a week right now. And it's just awesome, dude. It's just so good. But yeah, no, I get you on the fasting part. I definitely get you on the fasting front. But right now that is the breakfast is bacon, eggs, pancakes, coffee. Can't miss. It's just too damn good. And you get the carbs, you get the protein, you get everything you need. After that, you're set. You are set to go lift weights if you want. Like, you are good. All right, Hinoda, since ESL seems to be cutting costs, do you think they will keep the ESIC farce running now that it has been proven pointless? Ah, okay, so this is one of the things, this is one of those
points. He's joking as though ESL secretly owns and operates ESIC, as I think.
But that is how ESIC make money, isn't it?
It's one of the ways they're funded, as far as I know, yeah.
Yeah, they're funded by getting support from the teams and from the tournament organizers and whatnot. So, yeah, I mean, I think Hinoda, it's like, yeah, tongue-in-cheek, but, I mean, you're bang on the money, like... ESIC, clearly, if ESIC isn't able to do it, if it's just going to fall back on ESL and Blast to run the ship at the end of the day, why do they need ESIC? And so they're probably going to start seriously questioning questioning the money that they're handing over to these guys. It seems really, really silly to keep doing so if ESIC is, not going to be able to actually manage things. So yeah, and that was the joke, but that was the obvious joke. Every time it's just extortion with these organizations, or at least that was the CSPPA one that we got it up in arms about back in the day. All right. Butt Pounder 420. What is your favorite foreign food that isn't Korean barbecue? Aha.
What's yours?
Quesadillas. I can eat quesadillas for fucking ever.
You should know this from E-League. I fucking despise Mexican food. I said,
yeah, but quesadillas aren't Mexican food.
I don't even know the difference, mate.
It's American-Mexican food, dude. It's a creation.
The problem is I'm not a big fan of cheese, so that's also not for me.
All right.
Is that the version they made in your country in the same way as, like, chop suey was made in America?
You know how it is. It's like, right, dude, if you eat Mexican food in America, you're not eating Mexican food. You know what I mean? So it's just like, it's a creation, and I just fucking love it. And I can eat quesadillas every day of the week and never get bored.
I think my answer would probably be, let's see if it's not.
It's not meat. Basically, he's saying it's not Korean barbecue, so it's not meat. You can't just say a steak. Because obviously,
Thai food. I think Thai food's mad underrated. It's really consistent.
Yeah, Thai food's.
I like the spicy Thai curries. I think they're really fucking fire, mate. They're delicious.
Yeah, man. Yeah, man.
Like the sauces on them taste fucking incredible sometimes. Like really nice. Yeah.
Just don't, you know, it's like, you just don't fuck around, you know, when you say spicy and then they're like, spicy?
Oh, their idea of spice is way more. Yeah, exactly.
White boy spicy. Like, just, you know, flavor it. Don't take my face off. I don't need my face melting. You know? it's so brutal, dude. But yeah, Korean. Okay. But yeah, Korean barbecue is definitely top shelf. But I see that as just, you know, barbecue in general, man. Barbecue is just ribeye steak. Go. All right. It's go. What do you like eating for Christmas and New Year's? Do you do anything like that special for Christmas and New Year's? Do you have anything like a go-to dish?
There are some things. Like one thing I actually found, believe it or not, it's German. Whoa, calm down, everyone. No, but the reason I found it was in the UK, obviously, we have those Aldi supermarkets, which sell sometimes German stuff as well. Mm-hmm. And basically, the Germans have this stuff called Pfeffernuss. And basically, it's a type of almost like a gingerbread made into a little like cookie with like icing around it. It's really delicious. I would suggest go to, if you've got an Aldi in your country, go now while it's Christmas and you'll be able to buy like a whole sack of it. It's really fucking good. Cause I love like gingerbread stuff. I think it's the shit. If you haven't noticed, I think ginger in general, pretty underrated ginger. But enough about what I tell the ladies.
There you go. What do you like eating for Christmas and New Year's?
What do you like? What's your favorite?
Dude, actually the low key winner is the ham sandwich. In Sweden you can make these ham sandwiches because it's always like you get these big hams and you do like a big ham, you slice up the ham and you get like this special kind of mustard as well that they just make. It's like the Christmas mustard, and you slather mustard on that bad boy, and you know, you have ham at the dinner. But then when, because you're also
mustard
pounding
and pork goes
dinner.
Well, really well though. Yeah, I can see you got.
Oh no, yeah, but you're basically getting blasted the entire dinner too, because you're singing, and every time you sing, you take a little sip of schnapps, you know. So you're just drinking hard liquor, you're drinking wine, you're drinking beer, you're drinking other. So you're just getting blasted. So good times, right? That was actually how I got trolled by my in-laws the first time. Is first Christmas dinner they invited me to, and I didn't know how it worked
on it.
So, you know, you take the shot glass and you're singing the song, and and it's filled with schnapps. And they gave me the worst schnapps as well, Beska Dropa, which is just like, it tastes like turpentine or something. I imagine like paint thinner tastes like this. And I thought, oh, okay, you know, shots.
You drank the whole thing, right?
Drank the whole thing.
Instead of sipping it,
right? Dude, I'm like seven songs in. And so my wife is always making the joke. She's like, well, at one point you turned to me and said, it's starting to taste good. And it's like, at that point I knew that we needed to stop. We needed to stop fucking with you, because I was just blasted, just fucking taking these shots through Christmas dinner. It was great. Point being, long story short, is that at the end
same
of
with tequila,
the dinner,
though, by the way, if tequila ever starts to taste nice.
Yeah. You know,
just
abort.
Yeah, just
abort.
Not just abort. Just
get out.
Exactly.
Get out now. But no, the way is afterwards is when you get the knäckebröd, or you get leftover, you get the bread, right? You slather that bad boy with butter, and you take a big hunk of steak, like the ham, put that on there with the mustard, and you have that sandwich afterwards. It's just like the most satisfying post dinner, post alcohol sandwich. It's like a kebab. You know,
do you
like
know one thing I found out that's really mad is, I don't know if people know this, but in the UK, drinking culture is just drinking. That's why a lot of bars, famously, all they have for food beyond like 8 p.m. is like peanuts or maybe a packet of crisps or something. It's in general in UK, you just binge drink. That's all you do, right? And it's very, very, very much not famous that there are places where you can get food and drink. What I actually found out, believe it or not, like in Korea, it's already like this anyway. In Korea, it's just default. You're getting drinks and like some sort of snacks or food. Sometimes they even provide it for free. But actually, it turns out in like Russian culture, dude, they're eating the whole time while they drink. They don't just drink for 8 hours and run. You're always having like a pickle, some bit of... What people don't know is that that's actually one of the stupidest things we do in the UK. Because what you find is you think to yourself naively, oh, it probably make you sick. No, it's the other way around. Like, it soaks a bit the alcohol up. It gives you, like, replacement for all the shit that's coming out of you. Like, it's actually, I think it's actually a way better approach. I don't know why we're doing it like that in the UK, mate. Like, we wouldn't want some lovely snacks while you're getting fucking drunk. It's a shit.
Dude, Christmas dinner, and it's like a production in Sweden. It's like seven courses. And so and there's like a certain thing. It's like, okay, now you're going to have like the cheeses, and now you're going to have the fish, and now you're going to have, you know, like the warm, and then you're going to have the cold. Like it's a whole production. You're going through like the whole kitchen, like from spot to spot, station to station. So it's like this long drawn out thing where you're constantly eating. And then the dinner, you know, and then when you get into dessert, then it's called Risa de Malta, which is like rice and milk. It turned into a porridge, super sweet, super thick. And then maybe you get a ham sandwich afterwards. I mean, dude, you walk out of a Christmas dinner. It's like the meme in America about Thanksgiving dinner, right? Where you just get obliterated and eat until you pass out. I mean, that's a Swedish Christmas dinner, man. You're just you're going hard. It's brutal. So yeah, good times, good times. That's why you should probably fast going up to it. You know, maybe like come out of it like a 3-day fast and then do the Christmas dinner. That'll probably be the play. Or maybe it's the other way around. I don't know. But yeah, dude, Christmas dinner is an event in Sweden. All right, last question. Archives of Justinian, who is your favorite saint? On this note, I can't say. I'm currently doing some homework, and I can't say that I have a favorite one yet. Who is yours? Or do you have one?
Yeah. I mean, I think the obvious one, look, I'll only be paraphrasing someone else's take, but I just agree with it. I've said this before. There's a famous Terence McKenna rant where he says that his favorite, he doesn't say a saint, but his favorite like biblical figure was Thomas the Doubter. Because remember, when Thomas the Doubter was faced with the like technically like incorporeal form of Christ appearing in the upper room or whatever, everyone else just went, oh my God, it's Jesus. Oh, but this proves everything. Oh, he said, how do I know it's you? And the famous Christ said, like, put your hand into my side, feel the wound. And then in that moment, and you're like, right, it's real. So essentially, the reason I've always fucked with that is because that's who I am as a person. So I'm like, you know this, like, I'm not a guy who just believes stuff because people say so. Like, I need to know. I need to know for myself. I have to, I have my own burden of proof. I have my own sort of standards. So that's how I've kind of lived my life. Like, if people don't know, I've actually been able to do what people all think they would do, but wouldn't. Like, here's the thing. If you've never taken super strong psychedelics, you're all going to think it's like a movie. You're just like, oh, it's all colors. Like, I'm just me and it's just colors. No, the problem is it changes you as well in the experience. Like, you forget like what things relate to and what words mean and who you are and your memory, and it can be very confusing. But what I was always able to do, somewhere that was actually strength of mine, because I'm this type of person, is I can always know, no matter how wild what's happening, whether it was some supernatural event or psychedelics or something, I'm always able to think in the back of my mind, this could all be bullshit, even as it's happening. Like, I think I've once mentioned this. One time I had a super strong psychedelic event where I met like another entity. And in the time I was just thinking like, I wonder how this relates to Counter-Strike. I was just in the back of my mind for real. Like, it's like I was meeting like the like gods of the universe. Thorin, what are you doing? Like, yeah, but what's this got to do with T-Side Mirage, cocksucker? Like, you know, like I'm always able to do it. So what I would say is that, yeah, exactly. I'm just the doubter. It's who I am. It's just who I am.
That is the most fitting. It's also like the funny one, not a saint, but I always get a kick out of that picture that goes around Kakaoithes or whatever.
Oh, of course, yes.
It's just a picture of you behind it, basically. It's so good.
Oh, if people don't know, by the way, like there are way more saints than just the ones in the Bible, obviously. Like, if people don't know, there are some really mad ones. Like, I'll give you an example. There's one, a guy called Saint, well, it's French, so it'd be like Saint Guinefort. Do you know this one? It is a saint, go look this up, who was a dog. It's real. You can go look it up. He lives in the 13th century. He was a French greyhound that became a saint. So there are some really out there ones, guys, as well. Like, there's really out there ones.
Oh, who am I thinking of now? Is it St. Christopher, like the dog?
It was a similar one.
The dog-headed saint?
Yes, the dog-headed one, exactly. Yep, there's another one.
There's another one. Dude, I mean, as soon as you start getting into it, it's just when you realize there's volumes of books on saints. And you're just like, oh, okay. And then, so when they say it's like, read the saints, it's like, it's not a joke. Read the saints. There's books.
I also did like Saint Vicious from League of Legends.
Hey.
There you go. Izude was pretty good.
Got it.
Whatever.
All right. Oh, I think, dude, that's a good place. That's a good place to call it for the night. But thanks very much, my dude. Thanks very much, my dude, for another episode. And, well, I mean, I will see you next week. We'll be seeing how the world groups play out. And then, of course, we're going to have the episode pretty much right as they finish. So it's going to be perfect. We're going to get to talk right away about the results and what we saw. So that's going to be cool. So that's coming up next week. And then, yeah, thanks, everybody, for tuning in. Thanks so much for the support, as always. And be sure to leave a like, subscribe, all of that. If you leave a comment, I read all the comments. So if you want to talk shit or anything, just go ahead and throw it down below. And also, if you leave a comment elsewhere, iTunes, Spotify, we're on all those podcast spots as well. So if you leave a review there, it helps promote the show. So if you've made it this far, I trust in you subscribing. So thanks, everybody. Have a great time. Have a great day. And we'll see you next time.
Chris is monster in the future. Oh, still very much in the round. Oh, Chris, he's found three. It's down to a 2-on-2. Chris, can he close this with an ace? Oh, my God.
He gives him a chance at least, and this CZ kill could be everything. Finally, Zeus, he does something.
Looking for a second, he connects it. Oh, and he gets a third as well. Surely he's not going to.